Yes, it's time to launch a new episode of I Hate It Here. This one's going to be very special because it is going to be a review of the year that we've just lived through, which of course is 2025. And of course, I know a lot of people have been wanting to get back to the good old days of, you know, what I Hate It Here used to be. Obviously, no Sam this time. I'll be shooting it solo. But as I said, I have been trying out new people potentially to get the series underway. And today I thought, you know, I did say I would do a review of the year. So that's what we're going to start with today in an episode called I Hated 2025, because I don't know. I actually did. It was a pretty shit year, lots of nonsense going on, and ultimately very glad to leave it behind. Just before we get into the episode, I'm going to tell you how it's all going to be structured. I went through all of the big stories in the world, and a lot of the big stories that occurred in 2025 were fucking depressing. So that's not I Hate It Here's jam. Occasionally it would get serious and it would be depressing as a result of that. We would cover some serious stories, but we'd always find a little bit of levity in there as well. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be breaking up the big stories with some funny stories that I noticed to try and make it a bit more like I Hate It Here. Should be wrapped up in about 3 hours, hopefully. We will wait and see. We'll see how it goes. I guess it depends on how much we get into for the stories. And these are going to be in rough chronological order. I basically went through and kind of picked out and just kind of dropped them in to a document. And we're going to start where, of course, everybody knows we're going to start with Donald Trump being sworn in for his second inauguration. After a pretty insipid Biden presidency, where not really a lot of any of the things Joe Biden said were going to happen happened, combined with record levels of inflation in a post-2000s economy, and the fact that Joe Biden had clear and obvious dementia that was hidden the entire time, the referendum on Biden wasn't very kind, and everyone decided, oh, you know that guy that we all said was Hitler 2.0? Why don't we give him a second look? And lo and behold, Donald Trump was able to crack the blue wall, with, of course, the exception of Minnesota, which he's cracking in his own way, currently at the time of recording this, and was sworn back in what was a pretty resounding victory. It was kind of interesting because ultimately the shitlibs invented this term called the popular vote. And basically it was a way to say we still won, even when the Electoral College, the only thing that matters in a presidential election, didn't go their way. And in this instance, Donald Trump won the popular vote. But because he didn't win it by much, and then votes were being revised and counted at the time he was sworn in and Kamala Harris had given up, all of a sudden the popular vote didn't matter anymore. Anyway, not that it mattered, because Donald Trump was sworn in and had a pretty horrible, gaudy inauguration. If people remember, the inauguration was attended by all of the people that had ultimately decided to do a 180 on their personal politics, almost as if their personal politics never mattered to begin with, and turn up. I mean, Jeff Bezos, for example, had put all of his money into funding a newspaper that had the banner head saying democracy dies in darkness, and then decided that, you know what, fuck, maybe democracy isn't all that important anyway. They were all there. Tim Apple, you can see, is there. Zuckerberg is there. They all came out. And, of course, obviously all the podcasting set that had paid lip service to him in the build-up. They were all there too, the Joe Rogans and everything else. At the inauguration, of course, a particular interest was Elon Musk. I think it's fair to say that if the Democrats had won the election, Elon Musk would have been in a lot of trouble. There probably would have been some trumped up charges thrown his way. Not to necessarily say they need to be trumped up. If you're a billionaire, you're probably committing a crime somewhere along the line. And as the old saying goes, show me the man and I will show you the crime. Elon Musk had said that ultimately it was an existential matter that if Donald Trump didn't get reelected, civilization as we know it would end. I mean, certainly for him, as there is a good chance he'd be languishing in some blue gulag right now. And of course, the problem we've had with Elon Musk is Elon Musk was told to us by the shitlibs, this is the cool guy. This is the guy that's inventing new types of rockets, new types of electric vehicle. He made driving an electric vehicle, lest we forget, essential to the survival of the planet, as the mantra goes. He made driving electric vehicles cool. But because he didn't want to support Democrats anymore, something he had done in the past, and threw his lot in with Donald Trump, and indeed was having a weird sort of lottery where if you voted for Donald Trump, you had the chance to win $1 million, because that's how democracy works in modern America, apparently. Ultimately, now, he was another Hitler. Lots of Hitlers, you will notice, of course. And Elon Musk didn't do himself any favours. For those who don't know, Elon Musk is certainly on the spectrum. And when he's not on the spectrum, he's on ketamine. And at the inauguration, his eyes were fucking rolled up into his skull like he was fucking in the Kali cult from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And it was bouncing off the fucking walls. Then he decided that he was going to get up and give a speech. And in giving a speech, he decided to do a waving gesture. Now, unfortunately, the waving gesture looked like this.
Thank you. My heart goes out to you. It is thanks to you that the future of civilization is assured.
Right, well, anyway, it looks bad, not gonna lie. However, I went on the record quite quickly and early and will stay on this record forever, because you'd have to be a retard to think this was a Nazi salute. Why? That presupposes Elon Musk is a Nazi in the 1930s to 1940s sense, that he is in a room full of secret Nazis that also would really appreciate if he was to do a Roman salute right now. And that's his way of saying to all the secret Nazis, don't worry, the Nazis are here. But then obviously everybody knows the Roman salute, it isn't secret that Nazis like that. So it would be really, it would be a really dumb thing to do. In fact, if you were secret Nazis, the best thing to do would be to make up a new secret signal that no one knew about and start doing that, right? But no, instead, what you're supposed to believe is he's been waiting all of this time for Trump to get in, and then he's going to do Hail fucking Hydra. So this caused a ton of fucking controversy, proved the media is absolutely stupid. Similar gestures, by the way, have been done all across the political spectrum, all throughout the years. Even Mamdani, he was busting it out in his inauguration from there later in the year. In the press, they don't care, because they don't think he's a secret Nazi. They think Elon Musk is a secret Nazi and a not-so-secret Nazi by doing Nazi salutes. All of which is to say, the inauguration was deeply fucking stupid. It was paid for, by the way, by loads of corporations that threw money in. The media complained about that. Then people tapped the list of people that contributed to Biden's inauguration. And that one died on the vine as well. What we can say that was pretty disgraceful that Donald Trump did not long after getting in power, after the comedy of the inauguration had gone away and the secret Nazis under your bed bullshit had gone, was that he issued blanket pardons for everyone that participated in Jan 6th. Brought to you here lovingly by Al Jazeera. What he did was, he pretty much said, anybody that was caught storming the United States Capitol on Jan 6th of 2021 to attack police and potentially interrupt a handover of power, he decided that all of those people, which were labelled domestic terrorists, he decided all of those people deserved a blanket pardon and just to be released on the streets. To his credit, little though it is, those found of seditious conspiracy from the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, they just had their sentences commuted rather than being pardoned. The difference being, a pardon completely removes the charge. A commutation simply means you don't serve the jail time for the charge. Now, of course, he was given carte blanche to do this. Why? Because, I don't know if you noticed, but Biden, as he went out the door, well, and across the last year of his presidency, pretty much abused the presidential pardon power to a level that had never been seen, except since they pardoned everyone that dodged the draft for Vietnam. And this included Biden's own family members, not just pardoning them for things they've done, but pardoning them in the future and forever for things they may or may not have done in a 10-year period, if it's ever discovered, because political persecution or something. The minute that genie was out the bottle, Donald Trump rubbed his hands with glee and knew he could get a W with his MAGA base on the board nice and early with these pardons. Now, those of us who don't believe this was an insurrection, i.e. the people that can just objectively look at what occurred on that day without letting TDS eat away at our brainstem, we still can say a few things. Donald Trump's rhetoric certainly inflamed passions. He wasn't quick enough to tell the crowd to disperse. Ultimately, had he done those things, the actions that happened on January 6th wouldn't have occurred. Ashley Babbitt would still be alive. And ultimately, you have to lay that all at Donald Trump's doorstep. For me, it was disqualifying. The fake elector scheme was also disqualifying. But in the squalid world of American politics, ultimately, it's only going in one direction. And that direction now, because nobody wants to take the moral high ground, is when our team does it, it's okay. And if the other team gets in power, they're going to take what you did and they're going to extend it and they're going to extend it and they're going to extend it and they're going to extend it. And eventually, you're not even going to be able to see where the original line that had Norm written across it existed. That's the course you're on, America. Keep going. Who knows? But maybe it'll work out. Maybe it's all going to be okay. But anyway, that was pretty much the inauspicious start to the Trump presidency, which of course upset everybody. But not to worry, it was a tough time for Republicans in general. The party of bootstraps made headlines also when Representative Rich McCormick came out with this absolute gem. And yes, it's as bad as it sounds, if not worse. A Republican congressman decided that the children that would receive free school lunches, perhaps instead of receiving that federal aid, we could freeze that to save the taxpayer money and get the children jobs in McDonald's instead. Why not? You're going to go, surely this is a shit-lib trick, and this quote is taken out of context. Well, let's just have a read of the full quote. He said, before I was even 13 years old, before I was even 13 years old, I was picking berries in the field before child labour laws that precluded that. I was a paper boy, and when I was in high school, I worked my entire way through. You're telling me that kids who stay at home, instead of going to work at Burger King, McDonald's during the summer, should stay at home and get their free lunch instead of going to work? I think we need to have a top-down review. Not beating the allegations, because obviously they love children when they are in the womb. Very pro-life at that moment. The moment you are spat out, howling, mewling, screaming into this world, they don't give a fuck. That has pretty much been the Republican position for as long as I've been alive. So bootstrap yourself, kids. Go get a job at McDonald's and you may qualify for your free dinners. If you thought that was ridiculous, don't worry. The UK has been one-upping America in secret the entire year, and nobody seems to want to talk about it for some reason. So why don't we take a look at this incredible headline as well? Keir Starmer and his Labour government have been pushing for a few things. First of all, they want to empty the prisons, which are overcrowded, which mostly are overcrowded because they keep imprisoning people for Facebook posts. But they want to let people out, and they want to find ways to stop recidivism. So if you want to get your free dinners in America, you have to go work in McDonald's. But if you want to maybe rehabilitate, why don't you get a job in Iceland? Yes, this was a proposal that was put forward in January that petty criminals, instead of going to prison, they get to work in one of Britain's lowest end supermarkets in Iceland. The CEO, Richard Walker, said actually he thinks this could help with rehabilitation, and certainly it's got nothing to do with getting me a slew of cheap labour. He wrote to Lord Minister Timpson suggesting that if you have any low-level offenders, they could come and work at my supermarket in a bid to help with overcrowding in the prisons and reoffending. He said, we have a prison crisis and we have a solution that we think could be really powerful. And look, if people mess up and they don't turn up for work, then they go inside. If it all goes well, then that's your sentence. You don't go to prison, you don't lose your home, kids don't go into care. It all sounds all good and well until you really sort of process what the implications would be. That your prison sentence would no longer be at Her Majesty's pleasure, it would be at a corporation's pleasure, and you would have to serve to their standard before you get released. Kind of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but set in Sainsbury's. Setting the tone for stupid in the year was this gem coming out of America. Now, obviously, I don't know if you've noticed, people are upset about ICE, the criminal enforcement agency, the federal, well, they're trying to... You can argue it both ways. Are they criminal or are they enforcing the law against criminals? Depends which side of the political aisle you're on. But anyway, that deal primarily with immigration that was founded by Barack Obama in the year of 2003 in the post-9/11 landscape. Unfortunately, it's driven everyone in America fucking insane. And as you're about to get to in the next episode of Belly of the Beast, which you are not going to like, and I'm going to lose a lot of subscribers over it, ultimately what you've got happening in Minnesota right now is when the fuck around left doesn't meet the find out of law enforcement. We have done this for years. We have allowed people to be beaten up for wearing Trump hats and all sorts of insane shit. And listen, maybe a few of these people need to go to jail, because I do find it funny that on Jan 6th, all the Democrats got on the stairs of Congress and sang a song about how terrible it was and how we must support federal law enforcement officers and anyone attacking them is bad. And by Jan 9th, all bets were off in that regard. And actually, it's good to attack federal law enforcement officers. Anyway, we'll get into that in Belly of the Beast. This is a very different show. Remember, laughs, comedy. But here we go. How stupid can Americans be? They're stupid. TikTokers cause panic after mistaking ice cream van for ICE vehicle. Now, I know a little thing about Las Vegas law enforcement, having lived there. you can see what the truck looks like. It pretty much clearly says it's the ice cream patrol. I don't really understand how anyone could get this wrong. However, mass panic, of course, because ICE are in Las Vegas driving around handing out delicious treats to illegal immigrants, apparently. This is the story. A Las Vegas ice cream truck has been caught up in a social media furor after being mistaken for an immigration and customs enforcement vehicle. In a now-deleted TikTok video, a woman posted a video of Billy Settlemyer's Las Vegas ice cream patrol van, which bears a resemblance, I would say a slight resemblance, to a US law enforcement vehicle, stating, "Please be on the lookout for ice cream trucks. They ever play music to get people to come outside. This is actually so sick." You see, the TikTok video presupposed that ICE were posing as ice cream men to get people into the streets and go, oh, hello, I say, can I have a 99 with a flaky, Holmes? And then they round them and put them in the back of the van, something that is so absurd it could be a comedy sketch. None of that happened. It's just the state of America in 2025, something we will revisit, no doubt, multiple times over the course of the episode. Now, I do get it. I do understand why everyone in America was on edge and going ever so slightly crazy, because you may recall there was also a situation in Gaza. Gaza had been essentially turned into a pile of rubble post October 7th as Israel went in their pursuit of Hamas for that atrocity, which was the single largest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. Since then, there's been lots of talks about what we're going to do to stop Israel's intervention in that region. And the world has had its eyes on it, including the heavily compromised UN and, of course, the US media, most of which seem to be aligned with Hamas. Donald Trump has his own interest in this because Israel, in case you didn't know, they're an ally of the US and, of course, not just an ally, but a business partner. They buy lots of weapons. They do business with the US to protect themselves in that region. And so Donald Trump has had a lot of interest in securing peace in that area, but has also perhaps gone a little bit insane in other departments. For instance, he was claiming in February that he would want to rebuild Gaza. And you would go, wow, that's very generous and benevolent, until you see what he posted alongside that claim, which was an AI video that is like something out of a fever dream.
Finally here. Trump Gaza shining bright, golden future, a brand new light. Feast and dance, the deal is done. Trump Gaza number one. Trump Gaza shining bright, golden future, a brand new light. Feast and dance, the deal is done. Trump Gaza number one.
It's really hard to process what the worst part of the video is, but for me, it is probably this. The Soviet-era style golden statue of Donald Trump that would be placed in Gaza. Now, look, a lot of people accuse me of defending Donald Trump. I want to make it clear, I can't believe that a leader of the free world would ever post a video like this. Not to mention how incredibly tasteless it is. It makes a number of faux pas across the course of the video, which I have to believe Donald Trump didn't make, but was still happy to share. I mean, first of all, whatever you feel about Islam as a belief system, you probably don't have to create a video saying, we're going to come to your region and explicitly defy several tenets of your religion, including having scantily clad women still wearing face masks, dancing around Donald Trump in a nightclub that serves alcohol. That's not a particularly tempting new future for the people of Gaza. Equally, by the same token, if is the rebuild contingent on Donald Trump being allowed to have a casino in there or a hotel in there. That was heavily implied. In fact, Donald Trump, on a number of occasions, had said he was intrigued at the prospect of rebuilding Gaza, not as a humanitarian effort, but because the property prices would be so cheap. Yes, I would wager there's probably few cheaper places on Earth right now you could buy a house. Well observed, Donald Trump. Perhaps maybe, you know, Syria and Libya, you know, fucking Sudan. Like, yeah, there's some places for sure. But ultimately, he wanted to turn it into, air quotes, the Riviera of the Middle East. It's staggering, especially for somebody that has framed himself as a humanitarian. Down his term, his second term specifically, he has been obsessed with obtaining the Nobel Peace Prize. His failure to do so has put us in abject peril of him potentially deploying military units to a fucking NATO ally. It's pretty crazy. But anyway, all of which is to say his desire to rebuild Gaza is very much in his own image, and he wants to have golden statues of himself everywhere. He wants to sit on the beach having ice cream, may or may not have been purchased from an ICE law enforcement truck, with Netanyahu. It's staggeringly tasteless. And remember, he's only been in power a month at this point. Once again, to try and look at the other side of the aisle, in the end, we did eventually this year get something akin to a ceasefire and the release of the hostages. And the families of those hostages definitely say that Donald Trump was the sole reason it was able to happen. A lot of lefties wanted to say all Trump did was take Biden's plan for release and plan for ceasefire and run with that after having initially delayed it when he got into office. That, of course, isn't true. There's a number of significant changes and terms that were a lot more harsh on Hamas in the Trump document. But ultimately, this is the problem with Donald Trump. On the one hand, he might very well, as president of the United States, be capable of good things. Often, those good things might come through questionable methods and months of build-up of just saying ridiculous things, making outrageous threats, irritating global allies. And that's just the price you have to pay, evidently, for the next 3 years. We go over to Britain, however. While the world was preoccupied with Trump's new vision for Gaza, Britain preoccupied itself with this big story. Yes. The Only Way Is Essex star found herself in, Gemma Collins found herself embroiled in a bit of a public nightmare after she posted a video of herself hugging a pony. You can see the news here. TV personality Gemma Collins has told her followers not to stroke or feed animals in the New Forest National Park after facing a social media backlash for hugging a pony. The former The Only Way Is Essex star previously deleted a post from her Instagram after embracing the free-roaming horse. In May last year, a former Neighbours star was also criticised for feeding the animals. See, that's where we're at. We just live on our own island, quite literally and metaphorically. Next up, we delve into the world of crime. And this was a strange one, although it was a great year for heists. A gang was found guilty over a 4.8 million gold toilet heist And this happened at Blenheim Palace. The gang broke in, detached the solid gold toilet, which was fully functional, by the way. And they did it after there was a glamorous party happening in the stately home. The reason I wanted to pick this one out is it turns out that one of the gang members was able to defer where the golden toilet was due to his incredible ability to hear from miles away. See if you can spot which one it is. The fucking lugs on that guy. By the way, if I had a soundboard with Sam's laugh on it, this is where he would have been. In the end, five men were identified as part of the group of the heist and were subsequently sentenced due to extensively being caught on CCTV. They were also very unsubtle, having used two stolen cars to ram through the palace gates, smash through a window, and wrench the toilet out using wires attached to the back of a car. March also saw another type of internet scam claiming boomers. Boomers just, I don't know, the internet hasn't been good for boomers and things are only getting worse because of AI. I'm sure you know someone in your family or if you're one of my boomer audience in your friends group that has posted AI and not even questioned it. It's happening a lot now and unfortunately we've come so far from the days of the Nigerian print scam that we are starting to see ridiculous things occurring. It's been a bit of a double header. First is, and this is just one of many examples, AI celebrities reaching out to desperate lonely women saying that they need to borrow money. This is emblematic of the problem. This is an AI Brad Pitt dupes a French woman out of 830,000 euros. But she is not alone, and it's not only Brad Pitt doing it. You can see here that she went on a popular French YouTube show, and she wanted to tell the world she was not crazy or a moron. She just got played, she admits it, and that's why I came forward, because I am not the only one. However, hundreds of social media users mocked the lady, who the program said had lost her life savings and tried to take her own life three times since the scam came to light. It's absolutely horrible. However, there is an element of comedy in there, isn't there? You just can't ignore it. Ultimately, the premise goes something like this. Brad Pitt gets in touch with you, messages you, DMs you. You go, nah, you ain't Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt says, I am Brad Pitt and I'll prove it. I'll go on cam with you. You go, ooh, Brad Pitt. I do say you are giving me the vapors. You click a link, you go through, an AI Brad Pitt with very strange moving lips like the Curious Orange from Lee and Herring's show says, hi there, listen, obviously I'm Brad Pitt, so you know I've got a lot of money in the bank. I'm just not very liquid right now. Could you lend me some cash? And the woman on the other end goes, well, I never thought I'd be in a position to lend Brad Pitt money. And he goes, well, I'll make it up to you. I'll make it worth your while. As you probably know, me and Angelina, we're on the rocks right now. And, you know, I'm just on the lookout for some strange. So you give me 30 grand. Who knows what happens down the line? And eventually that 30 grand becomes remortgaging your house, throwing in all of your life savings, cashing in pensions, and everything else. And this has been done with a number of celebrities. I think George Clooney was another one. If you think of a leading man in Hollywood, there's probably some guy from a country, I'll let you decide which one, using him as an AI avatar, reaching out to desperate lonely women they meet on the internet to scam them out of their life savings. But it's not just that. If you're savvy enough to dodge the Brad Pitts of this world, are you savvy enough to get into this one? An investment opportunity like no other. The whiskey barrel scam. This is a new thing. A lot of people probably don't know about this one. This might be your first time hearing about it. But boomers with money have been emailed and proposed to about, hey, do you know what's going to make money over time? Guaranteed. Not gold. Whiskey. Because think about it. First of all, old whiskey has a scarcity problem, right? I've talked about this many times. It's why the no age signature movement for whiskey has really gained traction in recent years, because how many drinkable 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 60-year-old whiskeys can realistically be out there at any one time? Price go up, scarcity go up, price go up, opportunity to buy go down. And it sounds so simple. Well, if I was to buy a barrel of whiskey, let it settle for 20, 30, 40 years, that whiskey's guaranteed to be as delicious as a Macallan 60 and sell for thousands. And I'll have a barrel full of them, full of those bottles. It's a fucking surefire route to money. Except it isn't, because obviously you need to have good distillers, you need to have a product worth buying, and ultimately, and this is where a lot of these scams fell down, the product needs to be fucking real. Yes, if you can't go and check on the barrel, how do you know it exists? Especially if it's something you expect to appreciate in 30 or 40 years' time for your retirement funds. And many boomers have been caught by this scam that has proliferated on Facebook and via email pickups, etc. And this was one such lady, where she was scammed out of her life savings while battling terminal cancer. You can see here, the BBC report, victims have been conned out of millions of pounds in a whiskey barrel investment scam, a BBC investigation has found. Hundreds of people were duped into ploughing their life savings and pensions into casks that were overpriced or did not exist, while some individual casks were sold multiple times to different investors. The victims include one woman with terminal cancer who invested £76,000 and another woman who spent more than £100,000 on casks, which experts say were only worth a fraction of the price they paid. The BBC can reveal the police are investigating three Scotch whiskey companies over fraud allegations, with investments running into the millions. Ultimately, this is just a classic old adage, and it's something that always gets boomers. Boomers are always looking for that early retirement, that wonderful nest egg, as if they haven't had enough out of life, you fucking arseholes. You should try living on what the millennials are going through right now, but whatever. And so, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. And yet, even someone in the throes of a terminal illness will be willing to roll the dice just to have that fucking pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. However, we don't judge here on I Hate It Here, so I say to you, if you've got an elderly relative that's talking about investment schemes, talking about whiskey a lot, do let them know about this one and tell them absolutely to stay away from Brad Pitt. April got off with history being made. History, I say. A space mission called Blue Origin happened. And Blue Origin was funded by Jeff Bezos as part of their constant billionaire clamor to get to the moon or another planet before this one implodes as a direct result of their actions. So what was special about this one was it featured celebrities, and it didn't just feature celebrities, it featured all female celebrities, including Katy Perry. Now, was it a real space mission? No. A lot of Katy Perry fans were on social media being even more insufferable than they usually are, saying that Katy Perry was now officially an astronaut. And yes, she is in a way about as much as fucking the cast of Armageddon are. But ultimately, it did go into the fucking stratosphere and back. And it did so safely with a crew of celebrities. Essentially, you could argue, unmanned, you know. So, good for them. It's a great step forward for mankind. I'll be in the cold, cold grave and not able to appreciate it, as will many of you. But we do need to get somewhere else. Space travel is the future. This was a picture of the crew that went. Katy Perry apparently not only got out and kissed the ground after they landed, but she was also singing songs while you were up there. I can think of nothing worse. I probably would have pressed the fucking emergency exit. But there it is. She was loving it and had lots of good things to say. However, the internet, for some reason, took umbrage with this. First of all, you had the usual people that you would expect to get upset with an all-woman space mission, especially one that's done for the purposes of PR and publicity. It was the incels. You forgot about the incels in 2025. The incels in 2024 were all the rage, but really, all the incels have had going for them in terms of coverage is Adolescence on Netflix, a dog shit four-part drama that has been blown out of all proportion by celebrities, and the fact that Keir Starmer thinks it's a documentary. But incels turned up and incels didn't like this. They said, women, all women, yeah, women. Who built it? Who built the fucking thing that put them up there? Yeah, bet it was a man, bet it was a man. It was a man that funded it, women. And they said all of that. But then what was really interesting is there was a bunch of spiteful old crones that came out as well. Journalists, I call them, that also had their own view. Just check out this editorial in the fucking Guardian. Katy Perry went to space. Wasn't there anyone else we could have sent? No disrespect to the pop star or the rest of the Blue Origin's all-female crew, but most of them weren't obvious astronaut material. I didn't know they needed to be. So that was an interesting one. Spare a thought for Katy Perry. Her being excited about going into space generated headlines, not just like this one, but like this one. Katy Perry regrets public spectacle of Blue Origin space mission. Katy Perry is said to regret the public spectacle she made out of her Jeff Bezos-funded trip to space after receiving widespread media attention. The US pop star was part of the all-female team who took part in a controversial 11-minute expedition into space on Monday. Perry, 40, joined Bezos' fiancée, American journalist Lauren Sanchez, along with Gayle King, former NASA rocket scientist Aisha Bowe, civil rights activist Amanda Nguyen, and film producer Kerri-Anne Flynn in a Blue Origin rocket launched event in the Texas desert. The first female-only mission in more than six decades, it was billed as a historic event by the people behind it, but it has also been attracting mass controversy as some critics question whether it is quite the feminist moment it has made out to be. Some have accused it of being a marketing stunt for Bezos' space tourism business. It is, and that's fine. That is, in turn, the marketing arm of Blue Origin's commercial launch program. Perry, in particular, has been the subject of scrutiny over what some deem to be an over-the-top display. She's been in motherfucking space! Surely she's allowed to be excited about going to space. And trust me, I don't ever want to go to space. I'm never going to space. Fuck going into outer space. I don't even like commercial flights of more than 2 hours. I would have been kissing the ground exactly like this if I went up and down and came down and it was all fine. Because can you imagine if it had fucking exploded and killed all of those people? Be a very different tenor and tone in the coverage, I imagine. No way she should be apologising for this. And by the way, it gets worse. Because if you look, they also covered the negative reaction that she generated. Staggering. She felt battered and bruised by the backlash. Now, I will say she took atoning for this a bit too far because as an act of self-flagellation later in the year, she would start dating Justin Trudeau. Now, I'll also say as well, there's already rumours that the couple have broke up, which disproves once and for all, if you go back, you never go back. Didn't know if I was going to use that one. Well, we wrote it. We run with it. Anyway, let's move on to May. May was a big one. After a contentious month in the Vatican, we finally got a new pope. Congrats, everyone. It's an American libtard. It's the first time that the Americans have had a go at being the Jesus's vicar on earth. And it was Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost who was now taking on the name of Leo the 14th. Now, listen, as an accelerationist, he wasn't my choice, but he's the man for the job now. So, God bless. Here's to you. And in all seriousness, it kind of has added a very different flavour to what the church is talking about in modern times. Obviously, we've already lived through a few popes. It turns out you've probably had sandwiches that have lasted longer than some popes' reigns. But the reality is, very much dependent on where they are from, that will colour the types of things that they talk about. And having an American pope at a time when America itself is in turmoil isn't necessarily a bad thing. thing. And I have to say, even though I don't agree with everything he said or some of the blanket condemnations he's issued, I think he's been more right than wrong in the things he's talked about. For instance, right now, he is talking about how he has grave fears about freedom of speech and freedom of expression in Europe and particularly the United Kingdom. That's my Pope. I can get on board with that. It's a bit of a strange one. It is strange having the Vatican slightly attuned to American and Western sensibilities in a way that it hasn't been traditionally. But here it is. That's your guy. And he's relatively young for a Pope. He's 69. Nice. So he's going to be around for a fucking while, guys. Deal with it. Oh, I want a funny story after the Pope bit, but I haven't got one. It's all just horrifying in May. No, I'm not doing it. Hang on, I'm going to find a funny story. This might do it. Okay, it's technically in April. Let's all pretend it was May. It wouldn't be an episode of I Hate It Here without some seagull news. And just to let you know that they are indeed evolving and adapting. They're now closing public buildings with the bullshit that they're getting up to. This is footage of a seagull that has learnt to drop rocks onto windows and potentially destroy those windows. You can see here it is. It's picking it up. It's learning to use a tool. It's using a tool. And, I mean, maybe it's not the crisis that it was deemed to be from based on that footage. But it is worth knowing that if you have a building like this that's all glass, it's only going to take maybe a few gulls learning to do that with rocks for it to be a fucking problem. And just to let you know, this program stance remains that these gulls have got to go. I do not understand. I'm drinking out of a big gull mug, which you can get from my merch store still, right? They're still available. I just don't understand it. I don't understand why we're protecting these creatures. I still don't. I've never got it. But it remains a jailable offence to even harm a seagull. We're not just talking kill. I wouldn't advocate for the killing of animals. But let's say you've got a seagull nest on your roof. Let's say the seagulls are nesting on your roof and they're doing this to your roof or to your solar panels or whatever it might be. You can't move them. You're not allowed. It's against the law. You will go to jail if you go up there and move. Americans can't understand this at all. Put it this way, there's a lot of people out there that believe that birds aren't real and they're actually government cameras. And I will say, the way we treat seagulls makes sense. It would make sense. I'm on board with that fucking now. You know, it's fucking never been on board with that before, but it makes sense now that you think about it. So yes, the seagulls are still at it. They were at it in 2025. They're at it in 2026. No one's taking a stance. I will say this. I hope reform have a robust seagull policy. I think that puts them over the top to win. Should be careful doing that. It puts them over the top to win the next general election in the UK if they promise to get a grip on this seagull problem. That is more important to me than any other policy right now. Now we unfortunately get to horrifying stories in May of 2025. One of the biggest stories in the UK was while Liverpool were celebrating their Premier League victory in a parade in the streets of Liverpool, a car ploughed into the crowd and injured 50 people, including incredibly young children. As news of this went out onto the internet, you can imagine what happened. We had to deal with the speculation about what the cause of it might have been, and the usual suspects were agitating. For instance, it was immediately declared that it was a Muslim, and people were putting out names of just innocent Muslims that had absolutely nothing to do with any of this. And people on the internet were not just doxing them and tracking them down and calling for violence towards them. Other people were then cross-referencing it with other mosques and communities and saying, the guy that did it, who didn't do it, went to this mosque, may or may not have even attended that mosque. And it became this awful rightoid melange of gibberish. In the end, what it turned out to be, much to the dismay of many of the right wing, was a 53-year-old white British man, not a Muslim, had driven into the parade. Cue the next phase of bullshit. Oh, well, you see that you put it out there that he's a white British man. Why doesn't this happen when it's a non-white British man? Now, look, I can certainly agree there is definitely some jiggery-pokery that goes around with headlines. I've seen it myself. The media definitely like to cloak certain details. But it's hard to argue with a case like this. Cloaking certain details is necessary if you're just going to invent the fucking details anyway. So we have to tell you. We have to tell you it's a white British man or some innocent Muslim's going to get fucking strung up from a lamppost. Now, what was his motivation? Some people started saying, well, you know, you've seen them gingers. You can be white and be radicalized to Islam. No, that isn't what happened either. The motivation was the individual was fucked out of his mind on alcohol and drugs and became absolutely adamant in his brain that the parade was some sort of existential threat to him, panicked and drove into it. And how do we know this? Well, the perpetrator told us this because it wasn't like some master crime where he got away with it. He was caught pretty quickly. You can see here, Paul Doyle was an ex-Royal Marine. Someone who had served the country. Indeed, the rightoids stopped talking about this story very quickly because instead of it being some scheming Muslim from a radical mosque funded by Wahhabist Islam, it was indeed somebody that was a former veteran who had represented the country. Veterans, of course, being a protected class in the eyes of lots of people. It was the ultimate inverse of everyone's bad faith expectations about what had happened. And while we can potentially look at how he himself might be a victim. Ultimately, 50 people were injured and some people did indeed die. You can see the full story here. He drove at crowds in a rage after his anger had completely taken hold. He admitted to 31 charges, including grievous bodily harm with intent and dangerous driving in a fray, with victims ranging from a six-month-old baby to a 77-year-old woman. The married father of three was travelling into the city centre to collect friends from the parade when he lost his temper and drove his Ford Galaxy directly into supporters making their way home from Premier League title celebrations. Doyle was heard shouting, "Move!" and swearing at the crowd after he hit a 10-year-old girl. After being caught by police on body cam footage, he didn't even show any remorse. He just kept repeating, "My life is ruined now." 21 years and 6 months. Also in May, not for the first time in 2025, we stared into the abyss of World War III. And Richard Lewis pulled up his sign that said, "Nothing ever happens," and tapped it. But we did for about 4 days. Why? Well, everyone's favourite couple decided they were going to get into it again. Who am I talking about? Of course you know. It was India versus Pakistan. And that headline is so emblematic of everything that went wrong in May. India and Pakistan blame each other for escalating military tensions. Of course they do. They've been doing that since the invention of Pakistan. Ultimately, though, this was a bit of a bad one because this was as bad as it has got in recent times. There was a bunch of explosions in Kashmir, in the city of Jammu. The Indian military said Pakistan had fired missiles and launched drones at their military bases in Kashmir and even in Punjab. In India, Pakistan's defense minister came out and said it was nothing to do with them and it was actually a terrorist group that had done it, to which India turned around and said, "Ah, yes, but you fund and support the terrorist group." And so for 4 days, we sat and we said, well, where's this going to go? Remember, nuclear powers are at play here, and probably out of all of the nations that have beef and vitriol with each other, India, Pakistan might be more vitriolic than Finland, Russia. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm sure the Finns in the chat are going to disagree. Nah, I think this is about as bad as it gets. After all, they do that thing, don't they, where they go to each other's borders with their biggest soldiers in their nicest uniforms and do the Ministry of fucking silly walks to try and intimidate each other. So it's pretty bad. And then this was pretty bad. And also, just to tie it into my real life, we were traveling to an event that meant we might have had to fly over some airspace, which could have got a little bit tasty. Blair, my Indian colleague who lives in India, his plane was grounded because of this. He couldn't take off. We were going to Astana. We were going to Kazakhstan. So it was a very long flight. Blair had to sit on the tarmac while the plane figured out which direction it might need to go to avoid all of the airspace that could be got at by Pakistani missiles. And so, yeah, he arrived pretty late for that one. But it was also kind of hilarious. We all got there in one piece and we all had a laugh about it. Anyway, as you can see, this escalation, it only lasted 4 days before Donald Trump himself waded in to take credit for ending all hostilities between India and Pakistan, which he didn't do. To reiterate the point, India said several times publicly that actually Donald Trump had nothing to do with their decision and that there wasn't any pressure from international groups to stop the hostilities towards Pakistan. You can make of it what you will. Of course, at this point, Trump was still angling for that Nobel Peace Prize. So if anyone was in a war anywhere on the planet and that war suddenly stopped, Donald Trump said he did that. That was pretty much how that one was going. He's a Christ-like figure in many ways. We went into the summer and a viral moment.
Oh, look at these two. All right, come on. You're okay? Oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy.
It happened during a Coldplay concert in Massachusetts. So internet sleuths said that you quickly identified the man as Andy Byron, a married CEO of a billion-dollar software development firm called Astronomer. Now, that is not his wife. That woman is the company's human resources chief. She's head of HR. It seems the CEO's wife has completely deleted her Facebook account after she was bombarded with, you know, sympathetic comments. But still, this morning, his company saying that a supposed statement that was definitely going around everywhere, featuring a quote from Coldplay, it's fake. It's
right. So, yes, we're at KissCam Gate. That happened at the start of July. You'll also notice, yes, HR people not beating the fucking allegations, are they? It's always HR. But anyway, this was a CEO went to a Coldplay concert, was caught with his arms around an employee, which that just is normal in the world of esports, apparently. That's what I got told. No conflict of interest, no problem there. And it wasn't his wife, and indeed he was married. Coldplay went to do a kiss cam and caught them, put it up on a big screen. When they realised the ensuing reaction that you've seen on a loop occurred, that coverage there brought to you by Fox. Anyway, first things first, this is a perfectly normal reaction to being caught at a Coldplay concert. I wouldn't want any fucking documented footage of it either. However, yes, it did turn out he was engaged in a bit of a spicy affair. And so this spilled out onto the internet. There were a few things going on, though, because ultimately, first of all, there was the people that don't think you should have affairs. I don't cares. Have affairs. Not my business. Not anyone's business. I don't even think it necessarily makes you a bad person. I think it's a case-to-case basis. I also think, you know, this is a tough one to say out loud. People aren't going to like it. I think everyone gets one. I think you all get one. Just keep it secret, but you all get one from me. Richie Liu says it's okay to have one. I don't care. I don't care. It only hurts you if you know about it. So just keep it secret. Keep it safe. Everyone gets one. One. You start doing it more than that, you might need to have a think about the future of the relationship. One, just going to keep it spicy. Anyway, the problem with this also was he was a CEO. And I don't know if you know, this is the year that Luigi Mangione was turned into a fucking pinup. So CEOs, not incredibly popular. Indeed, people on the social media feeds were all saying this is typical of CEOs. CEOs think they can have everything. They took all agency away from the woman. It's an employee as well. I bet he treats her like a serf, a peasant, someone he can just do anything to. Fuck that CEO. Let's get him. Let's get him. Let's get him. So they went after him. And the internet was all a bub. It was a fucking mess. You ended up with an apology circulating from the CEO. What was supposed to be a night of music and joy turned into a deeply personal mistake, playing out on a very public stage. I want to sincerely apologize to my wife, my family, and the team of Astronomer, more on who they are in a moment. You deserve better from me as a partner, as a father, and as a leader. This is not who I want to be or how I want to represent the company I helped build. I'm taking time to reflect, to take accountability, and to figure out the next steps personally and professionally. I ask for privacy as I navigate that process. I also want to express how troubling it is that what should have been a private moment became public without my consent. I respect artists and entertainers, but I hope we can all think more deeply about the impact of turning someone else's life into a spectacle. As a friend once sang, lights will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try to fix you. Andy. Everyone hated that fucking apology. People said, oh, it's the classic non-apology. Those CEOs, they don't think they have to apologize. They not like us. They not like us. Here's the thing. The apology apparently was fake and he hadn't said anything publicly whatsoever. He actually came out to address the fake statement that got made here, lovingly reported in the Wales Online paper. But this only generated more hate and more attention. As a result of that hate and attention, more fake news stories started to circulate. Despite there not being any proof of this being accurate, there were stories circulating that now the CEO was looking to sue Coldplay. And how I wish he would. Not just for what they did to him, which is nothing, but just for their musical output down the years, for they are truly appalling. But no, there's no evidence that this is happening either. It was just a nice little viral story. But that didn't stop people shutting up about it. Well, also, turns out the company that he was the CEO of, Astronomer, is an AI company. Its description is it empowers data teams to bring mission critical analytics, AI, and software to life. And this meant this guy wasn't going to be fucking spared at all. Because if you ever want to just trigger a random crowd of people, there's fewer things that will do it more than AI. It might even be above Trump as a word to trigger people at this current moment in time. AI is criticized for everything from taking away jobs, it will, destroying creativity, it does, overloading the internet with slop, yeah, that too, and destroying the environment because apparently the average GPT search uses 10 million gallons of water that we can't ever get back. Who knows? But anyway, he was now the avatar of AI CEO-ship and wow, cheating too? What a terrible person. The media itself couldn't help themselves. This article in The Guardian, just beyond a joke, obsessed with the Coldplay kiss cam story? No, I was too, until I realised the sinister truth at the heart of it. Nobody should expect to go to a huge concert and expect privacy, but the incident is a jarring reminder of the reach of the surveillance state and the internet's insatiable appetite for public shaming. It just kept running for days and days and days and days. But in the end, it went away. It was just a viral moment, nothing worth considering for too long. Then, July, a dagger to everyone's heart, because if Coldplay are a horrifying insult to man's ability to make and pursue music, and music's ability to make you feel and think, then the person we lost once and for all in July is someone that will forever stand as a testament to music's transcendent beauty. Ozzy Osbourne had put on a final concert, a reunification with Black Sabbath. He wanted to have one final bow in his native Birmingham, where I currently live. I considered getting tickets for this. I nearly went because it felt like it was going to be the last time you would see them. Very few times are farewell tours actually farewell tours, but Ozzy had been in poor health for some time, struggling with Parkinson's and just the results of a hard life, long lived. And he went out there and wanted to give it his all for one last gig. Now, I can't play you footage of the concert here without getting copyrighted and it will fuck up the YouTube video. But I urge you to go out and look at his last performance. the man actually still had it. This wasn't Axl Rose, who sounds more like Mickey Mouse these days. This was one of the kings of rock, rocking out one last time. And by the way, he had an ensemble cast of people that understood the assignment, that produced a number of resplendent songs and performances that really were a fitting tribute to Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath are etched into Birmingham's history. There's a huge fight not far from where I live about destroying the pub, the first pub Black Sabbath ever played in Birmingham. There is a museum that tells you all about Black Sabbath, why we call it metal, because a lot of these people worked in metal factories. It is the music of the working class, and Ozzy Osbourne elevated it for everyone for all time. Unfortunately, this story doesn't have a happy ending. There wasn't a sellout tour coming afterwards. Shortly after the concert, Ozzy Osbourne passed away, which is also kind of amazing in and of itself, almost as if this guy that lived a life with no compromises finally decided, look, I've just done it all, I'm ready, send me away. And the tributes are heartbreaking. I mean, put it this way, it would be easy for a marriage between a woman who herself was a celebrity and or would become a celebrity, and Ozzy Osbourne, one of the biggest rock pioneers of all time, to have a dysfunctional marriage. But they actually didn't. It was very sweet and heartfelt, and they absolutely loved each other. And unfortunately, the toll this took on Sharon was pretty apparent for all to see. And everybody, I don't know, you grow up with Ozzy Osbourne, you just think he's going to be around forever. This is a guy who probably done more drugs than everyone in this chat combined. I tried, Ozzy. Probably drank a river and made indelible music that will still be talked about 100 years from now. The death really hit everybody. And just a legend. The resultant funeral turnout in Birmingham, I can say, I poked my head around the corner while it was happening. The streets were lined. It is fair to say, it wasn't fake, it wasn't performative. People genuinely loved Ozzy Osbourne, and he will be missed. Now, because even a heartfelt, wonderful tribute like this, even the world coming together to recognise that one guy from Birmingham changed music forever, gave us anthemic songs that will resonate. Americans, and in particular American politicians, can fuck up anything, including a wet dream. And Andrew Yang, desperate to pay tribute and to get in on that social media clout, said this. He said, "Rip Ozzy Osbourne, a true American original." Yes, Ozzy Osbourne there, American as apple pie. It's a shame. I like Andrew Yang. I don't want to put him on blast, but this was so ridiculous. Like, you just look, if you're unsure, mate, look at Wikipedia at the very least, right? This was like a fucking fart in a jacuzzi. If I know a fart in an elevator, a fart in a jacuzzi, you don't notice it. A turd in a jacuzzi, more like. He was not a true American original, and as one Twitter user noticed, is Andrew Yang is retarded. He's not retarded, he's just wrong. And to his credit, he did delete and then edit and said, "Rip Ozzy Osbourne, a true original and pioneer." But America, much like Greenland, hands off. Ozzy Osbourne's ours. He's our son, not yours. And then, as if to prove the point that America is just a deeply, deeply divided place filled with people that at best are stupid and misguided, at worst are cripplingly mentally ill, we had this. The Sydney Sweeney American Eagle controversy. Now, I did a whole episode on this of Belly of the Beast because the media ran with this. So, we arrive at one of the dumbest media controversies potentially of all time. Sydney Sweeney is an attractive lady. There. I said it. I'm about to say something else controversial. She's an attractive lady with big boobs. There. I said it. I'm going to say something else controversial. She's an attractive lady with big boobs, and a lot of guys like big boobs. By the way, not me. I'm a fine ass guy. But a lot of guys like big boobs. It's not our fault. We're programmed to like big boobs on some fucking, you know, primitive level. It's really about selecting a partner that we think's going to be conducive to motherhood and furthering our species. Because men are so dumb, big boobs, more milk or something. I don't fucking know. Right? But that's what's going on. You can't help it. So, guys like this. And you know what? It's totally okay if a woman with agency wants to fucking lean into that. And Sydney Sweeney has leaned into that. She's leant into that in the roles that she selected in acting, the TV series she's done, the advertisement she's done, the gala she's attended. It's all fine. This is fine. I never understood this ridiculous argument about the male gaze in itself being inherently evil. Where it gets bad is if you have the gaze and the person goes, yo, please don't gaze. And you go, oh, I'm gazing. I'm going to gaze. That's when it's bad, right? Like, if a woman says, shit, man, they're gazing. I can make a fuck ton of money. Look at this. That's sick. Everyone's winning, right? And that's going to be something that's going to happen. All the crying about it in the world isn't going to stop it. It's not sexist. It's not misogynist. It's just what we are as a dimorphic species. That's how it works, right? So, anyway, she decided to do a jeans commercial with American Eagle. You want to know what? I'm going to find the commercial. Let's start with that, actually. That'll give you a good sense as to whether or not the controversy should exist.
Jeans are passed down from parents to offspring, often determining traits like hair color, personality, and even eye color. My jeans are blue.
Sydney Sweeney has great jeans.
Right. That's it. That's the ad. Obviously, you can see there the play on words, right? By the way, I covered all of this in the Belly of the Beast episode, if you go look it up on the Substack. But obviously, the play on words is very simple. Jeans, jeans. She has good jeans because she's attractive, right? But also, she's got good jeans because she buys American Eagle jeans. And you can see her zipping up those jeans. Ooh, it's all in the erogenous areas, isn't it? That's it. That's the ad. Now, for some reason, the average American libtard looks at that and thinks that's secret coding to tell Nazis to rise up and white supremacy is real and good. And honestly, moments after that ad was out there, this is the type of thing that was being flooded onto TikTok. And again, I usually don't use TikTok videos, but it was baked into this. So you have to understand, it was a trend that started on TikTok. The media got hold of it, and they thought they could use Sydney Sweeney to basically say, ah, Trump's America, the Nazis are so back.
Is that a company whose name is literally American Eagle is making fascist propaganda like this? Probably not, but it's still really shocking. Like, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white woman is talking about her good genes. Like, that is Nazi propaganda.
It is, of course, not Nazi propaganda, but I guess it's like a Rorschach test for whether your brain is fucking broken or not. And that, indeed, is what it was. People were pushing this on TikTok, and then the media got hold of it. And you can see ABC, owned by Disney, no less, ran segments on their news channels like this.
Time to check the pulse. We begin with the backlash over a new ad campaign featuring actress Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, the ads are for American Eagle, and the tagline is, Sydney Sweeney has great genes. Now, in one ad, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed actress talks about genes as in DNA being passed down from her parents.
The play on words is being compared to Nazi propaganda with racial undertones.
The pun, good genes, activates a troubling historical associations for this country. The American eugenics movement in its prime between like 1900 and 1940 weaponized the idea of good genes just to justify white supremacism.
Despite that backlash, American Eagle stock has been soaring.
Of course, because you created a controversy that was worth more money than the advertising ever could have hoped. But obviously, this didn't end there. You can see, look, back to the original article I was showing you. People were going to say, oh, this is why it was so controversial. Look, parallels to alt-right ideals. On paper, Sweeney, an all-American blonde, is the ideal spokesperson for the brand, said Fran Hopfner in Vulture. But in a country where diversity initiatives are under attack and mass deportation occurs daily, an advert on how awesome it is to be white and blonde-haired and blue-eyed comes across as tasteless. Of course, the ad didn't say any of those things. It's hard to ignore the parallels to alt-right ideals and historical ideas about eugenics, with a play on the word genes. Genes, and a focus on Sweeney's stereotypically Aryan features, said Natalie Fear in Creative Block. Whether it's an unfortunate choice of tone or a veiled dog whistle, it's puzzling that this advertisement was approved at all. And I will refer you back to the argument that I made when we were talking about Elon Musk. To think this is a dog whistle presupposes there are a bunch of secret Nazis in America that are lying dormant until they see culturally enough dog whistles, which can only be detected by American shitlibs, by the way, typically in academia and journalism, almost as if they're not actually dog whistles, because dog whistles are designed so only dogs can hear them. And then what they're going to do is they're going to rise up, put on the incredibly attractive uniforms and start marching and parading around America and taking it back, because we're back, we're so back, Nazis are back. That is, you would have to be deranged to think that is true. And instead, it was just to say, hey, we know Sydney Sweeney's attractive. She's got good genes. You know what she also looks good in? Our genes. Her genes are blue. That's it. Didn't say her genes are better, her genes are superior, none of that. She's got good genes. You could have better genes, by the way. No, didn't even say she had the best genes. This was just absolute fucking lunacy. And it was one of the... What was interesting was the response, because even though they tried to push this as hard as they could, I'll read you a bit more from this article. Whatever the campaign's intentions, the wider reaction to it clearly reflects an unbridled cultural shift towards whiteness, conservatism, and capitalist exploitation, said Hannah Holland on MSNBC, now MS Now, because that's how good they're going. And also, advertisements are mirrors of society, and sometimes what they reflect can be ugly and startling. Then, of course, you had all of the people talking about the shitlib over woke overreaction, which, look, it's just as cringe. But people really wanted to make this a thing. They really wanted to make it racist. I'll just show you the Guardian here. This was born in the USA. Is American Eagle really using whiteness to sell jeans? Of course, no, that wasn't even mentioned at any point in the advertisement. You had other celebrities, like people, actors in the TV show White Lotus, and they were throwing out little barbs and insults, saying, you know, Sydney Sweeney doing that advertisement was somehow irresponsible. And then we got one of the best, most viral moments, in my opinion, of the year, which was Sydney Sweeney pulling a face of utter contempt while being interviewed by a journalist. And this is just the short version of that clip. There's a 2-minute clip you can go and watch if you want.
Was basically that the criticism of the content, which was basically that maybe specifically in this political climate, like, white people shouldn't joke about genetic superiority. Like, that was kind of like the criticism, broadly speaking. And since you are talking about this, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that specifically.
I think that when I have an issue that I want to speak about, people will hear.
So not only is she attractive, she also is smarter than your average journalist, because she refused to step on that rake, no matter how many times the journalist laid it out. Of course, the whole thing was a storm in an E-cup, a non-traversy. Nobody thinks for a moment, genuinely, I would even argue, except the most brain-broken TikTok posters, that this was in any way promoting white supremacy, racism, genetic superiority of blonde hair, blue eyes. It was just simply a way to sell jeans. And ultimately, Sydney Sweeney has, of course, come out of it relatively unscathed. And that's an interesting sign of the times, because even though America is deeply divided right now and we are getting yet another kind of Minnesota series of protests, a la what happened after George Floyd was murdered, ultimately, at this moment in time, in 2025, people were saying, look, we're just not into this anymore. You see something, you want to say America is the most racist and horrible and horrifying it's ever been. It isn't. Your tricks won't work. We don't have to go along with what the media says anymore. You have no power. Fuck you. It's embarrassing at this point. And that's refreshing, because we went through 10, 11 years of people getting fired for doing this, people gaslighting you to think if you ever posted a green frog, by the way, now a symbol of resistance being used in Minnesota, I shit you not, but if you've ever posted a green frog, you're a secret fascist. If you have slightly different views on immigration to anyone else, you're a racist. If you want to buy American Eagle jeans, you're a card-carrying Nazi. People are just over it. And that's probably one of the better things to come out of 2025. Or maybe it was this, an absolute banger from Britain. There's a member of parliament called Rupert Lowe. And you know what Rupert Lowe doesn't like? He doesn't like them bloody immigrants coming into our country on them boats. Stop the boats, stop the boats, he says. Unfortunately, like a lot of people, when you become obsessed and fixated on something, what you see everywhere, reality starts to break, like you're inside the Inception fucking dream, three levels deep. And that happened to Rupert Lowe. This is the headline. The MP mistook charity rowers as possible illegal immigrants. He posted this photo from Great Yarmouth, and he said, we've got bloody immigrants on boats up here now. Look at them. Except, of course, it was a charity row designed to raise money. What he posted on X was, authorities alerted, I am urgently chasing. If these are illegal immigrants, I will be using every tool at my disposal to ensure that these individuals are deported. Enough is enough. Britain needs mass deportations now. However, it was then later explained to him that what the unknown vessel, it wasn't, was a false alarm. He said, we received a huge number of urgent complaints from constituents, but I make no apologies over being vigilant. It is, after all, a national crisis. What did the boat people have to say? Well, you can see here, the crew of four, which included Mike Bates, a British record holder for rowing across the Atlantic solo, said they found the whole thing hilarious. Mr. Bates said, I looked to my right and there was maybe a dozen individuals stood on the shoreline staring at us. I've not been mistaken for a migrant before. The best comment was the one asking where the Royal Navy were when you need them. I'm a former Royal Marine, so the Royal Navy were actually on the boat. Mr. Bates said it was almost vigilante style how people followed them down the beach. Fellow crew member Matthew Parker said they had been trying to find shelter and wait for the tide to turn when they saw a drone flying above them and people starting to gather on the shoreline. You've got these people on the shoreline all flashing torches at us, he said. We've got the Coast Guard asking us questions. A police car arrives on the beach with its lights on. How has this managed to get escalated this way? I just thought it was ridiculous. Anyway, so far, they raised more than £100,000 for charity and hope to raise even more. Look away now, lovers of NFL. I've just got to briefly mention it. I'm sorry, I apologise. It's Taylor Swift. Unfortunately for everybody, Taylor Swift has been ruining football games in America ever since she started dating Travis Kelce. After a long line of albums about how she's had terrible boyfriends, even worse breakups, and was always permanently available, she finally seems to have settled down with a man who looks like a bear. I'm not implying for a second she's a beard. I'm sure they're very much in love. I'm genuinely being sincere. But the problem is, of course, every single football game she has attended has just resulted in at least 30 close-ups of her celebrating from the VIP booth. It's also led to perhaps one of the most cringe-worthy announcements of a marriage I've ever seen, which you can see on your screen. Your English teacher and your gym teacher are getting married. If Taylor Swift is your English teacher, God fucking help you. You might end up running a daycare in Minnesota. Didn't know if I was going to use that one either, but it's there. So, they finally announced that they were going to get married after years of speculation about that. And ultimately, that's a good thing, because now it's less exciting that if they get married, we certainly have to see her less, right, at the football games, which is great, because her contribution to football has been absolutely destructive in ways I couldn't have even predicted when this relationship started. Now, don't get me wrong. The rightoids were out there and they were saying, ah, this is all a big conspiracy and they're going to get married at the Super Bowl the Chiefs went to. Chiefs aren't even in the playoffs right now. Nature is healing. Fuck the Chiefs. But anyway, a lot of rightoids believed that this was a conspiracy and not a real relationship because Taylor Swift had spoken out against Trump. Travis Kelce was advertising vaccines and they genuinely believed they were going to get married at the Super Bowl. Travis Kelce was going to rip his shirt off in the middle of the ceremony, stick a bunch of fucking Pfizer jabs into himself while bloodstained money rained from the sky and Donald Trump was impeached for the third time. I don't know how you get there mentally, but that was a thing. None of that happened. But what did happen, and what should upset you, is Taylor Swift fans started to learn about American football. They wanted to get involved with American football, and it's only got progressively worse. I'll just show you one article that came out when the relationship first fucking started, and it is deeply upsetting. This is it, A Swifties Guide to American Football from 2023. Who are all these people on the field? Oh, God. Look at this. There are 22 people on the field during a football game. Coincidence? I don't think so. That's 11 on each team. So just think two less than Taylor's lucky number. Our boy Travis is a tight end. Sounds like a naughty term, but it really isn't. Why are they tossing a coin? Oh, yes. The Swifties. You have to admire their commitment to the bit. They love Taylor Swift so much, they were willing to learn about football, no matter how hard it is to learn. And trust me, speaking as a British guy that's followed it since the late 80s, yes, it is actually a more complicated game than you might give it credit for. But you can learn the basics probably in about 5 minutes. Anyway, they tried really, really hard. Fortunately now, with the marriage occurring, we can put all this to bed and it just not be a novelty anymore. Fingers crossed. Into September. September's going to get dark, guys. Buckle up. Let's do the bad one first. Even though it's not technically chronological, it'll just flow better. Everyone's going to need a palate cleanser after this one, because it would be remiss of me to leave it out. Charlie Kirk, of course, was murdered in public in this month of September 2025. It's hard to believe it wasn't even that long ago, because the world seems to have mostly moved on from what might be the most politically significant assassination in America in a long time. Now, ultimately, the death of Charlie Kirk really brought home to a lot of people how divided America is. My views on it at this point are well documented. I've lost long-term followers over this. Incredibly, I've lost people who professed to be friends over this. I've had arguments with people whose intelligence I respect over this, but my viewpoint remains unwavering, and it is this. I think Charlie Kirk doesn't necessarily represent a majority of American viewpoints. However, I think if you are a nationalist and you are a devout Christian that believes everything adheres to God's plan, I think his worldview made sense. And his worldview was, no, you can't become a different gender because God made you as you were. No, you shouldn't abort babies because that's part of God's plan. And that means that even if it's a rape baby, it should be brought to term and brought to life. That's a view I find abhorrent and insane, but is actually gaining in prevalence among serious Christians, as far as I can tell. He's someone that believes that all forms of illegal immigration have to be stopped, that there couldn't even be a net positive of turning a blind eye or having an amnesty. He believes that God's word is final and absolute. He has publicly said, and people treated this like it was a gotcha when he was killed, when really it's the dumbest attempt at a gotcha of all time. He said, if people have to get shot in public and school shootings have to occur, he said that is a price everyone should be willing to pay in order to have the Second Amendment in America. Indeed, if I performed a fucking seance now and a toffee crisp wrapper fell down from the light shade, that's a deep cut reference. Charlie Kirk himself would say, listen, fuck it. Don't repeal the Second Amendment, even though I have my neck fucking blown out. I think the reality of America needing to have a conversation with itself is to accept that while Charlie Kirk might represent an extreme end of a spectrum, it's a spectrum that has to be acceptable. Because if you say it isn't, if you say Charlie Kirk is an extremist, if you say he's a radical, if you say the things he said are so out of pocket he deserves to die for saying them, then America is done. It cannot talk to itself anymore. And the only way moderates on the left are going to persuade people on the right as far out as Charlie Kirk is through conversation. If you can't have a conversation and you just want to fucking shoot each other, you're done. You're done as a nation. It's over. Now, I'm not saying all viewpoints have to be listened to or adhered to or enacted. I'm not saying some viewpoints aren't reprehensible and shouldn't have a seat at the table. I'm just saying Charlie Kirk didn't represent that for me. And that's where I stand. And unfortunately, a lot of people disagree. I watched when Charlie Kirk was shot. I watched people celebrate it. I watched people I like celebrate it. I watched people I considered compassionate joke about it. Now, one of the things that we all agree on usually is on the day somebody dies, you temper it, you dial it down, see you with the edgy jokes in a week or two. There was no such grace for this guy. And people went, well, he was an edgy boy. So he's going to get edgy treatment. Maybe that's all fair play, but the problem is when it's one of yours and you want grace and it's not forthcoming, here we are. And unfortunately, what we've seen at the end of the year with the Rene Good shooting really reflects that. We are draining the well of empathy at a level that America can't survive. And until somebody starts topping up those levels of compassion, we're in for a real rough ride throughout 2026. I think the murder especially resonates because ultimately Charlie Kirk was there in front of his wife and children. And I don't think best will in the world anybody could deny he was a good father and husband. He was very devout to that duty. He did, when speaking about marriage and fatherhood, have a lot of good and moderate and intelligent things to say. No one should have to witness that. I mean, we've all lost family members. We've all lost parents, probably, for some of us. Imagine seeing that person you care about at a public speaking engagement being fucking assassinated, and you haven't, that's the last enduring memory of that person for you. To wish that on kids is despicable. And so ultimately, it's very tough. I also saw Charlie Kirk misrepresented. You don't need to make a bigger monster out of these people. Just judge them for what they say and what they do. That's it. That's all you have to do. Judge them on their words and their deeds. And very often you will find valid critique. You don't need to fabricate things. A lot of fabrications in the aftermath, misrepresentations of quotes and comments to justify a vitriolic hatred that I consider to be gauche. And I did a 3-episode special on Belly of the Beast about the entire timeline of it and how we arrived at this point. And trust me, Charlie Kirk isn't going to be the last if things continue down this road, because ultimately both sides of America have forgotten how to talk to each other in a civil way. I also have to say, I didn't find it particularly pleasant that everybody then immediately turned to Erica when Charlie Kirk was barely cold in the grave. The narrative coming out of both right and left is that she was in some way profiting from his death, that she was in some way reveling in his death and gaining from it. And actually, she might have been involved in it, if you believe batshit people like Candace Owens. It really displayed the worst of the culture war slop and how it breaks everybody's brain. When ultimately I saw a murder occur from multiple angles on social media that everybody got to absorb, that really once again reflects what reality you live in. Do you live in a reality where America can come back from the brink and heal and be normal in a post-Trump landscape? Or do you want to keep ratcheting up the extremes? Depending on what you believe, you are either securing a future for America or you're reveling in its destruction. It's entirely up to you. Anyway, all of which is to say, it was a dark start to the month and it remains dark. People haven't really come down from the towering frenzies that they're in on either side as it relates to that particular topic. Now, yes, it was a very traumatizing month. Sometimes you do see terrible things happening to people you idolize. So spare a thought to the children that were out for their birthdays at Chuck E. Cheese, where a officer had to arrest the Chuck E. Cheese mascot in character in Tallahassee, Florida. As segues go, I don't know if I've ever done one that's as tonally incongruent as that, but...
And I only have one to ten.
We gotta do our job, ma'am.
It's not my call, ma'am.
Now, credit to the officers for doing it in character. I don't know if you heard that, but he was saying, come on now, Chucky, it's time to go, please don't resist. But look, the jokes write themselves on this one. You know, when will mice be abolished? You know, we can do it all, right? All the material's there. Who ratted him out? We can do it. We can do the bits. But ultimately, yes, the children were fucking traumatized. You see an armed police officer coming in and arresting the guy that is designed to dance at your birthday, dance at your party for you, and being taken out. I'm sure those kids are going to... That's a memory that's just seared in. Now, I don't know the fallout from this case. That wasn't reported because that wasn't a novelty, but it was over an alleged stolen credit card. So, you know, you judge... which way you think that one went. Now, we go back to Britain. You'd think it was all quaint in Britain, you know, with the stories that I'm picking out. I can tell you we're deeply in trouble. I'm just kind of trying to avoid it. But here we go. This was another little comedic one. This is classic I Hate It here. A lady that wanted to go on a holiday in Malta, of all places, ended up getting misquoted £5.8 million to go there. It was the... TUI Holidays. She downloaded the app as she was instructed to do and decided she'd have a quick getaway to Malta. She was originally quoted £260.35, very reasonable. Right? But then she got an app telling her the price for the holiday had gone up and she went there and for two people it would have been £11.5 million. Needless to say, if you've ever been to Malta, you know it isn't worth that. She quickly contacted the front desk and the travel company apologised, and it was just a system error, which was caused by an ambitious pricing error. Now, here's what's interesting about this. There's an undertone to all of this funny story. There we are. Love you, ESL Pro League. Godspeed. There's an undertone to this that's worth just pondering, because it is... one of those classic I Hate It Here extensions. You think this is a computer error. It is. But why? Why has the computer error occurred? Well, ultimately, a lot of these travel agents, a lot of these places that have you to book holidays, what they do is they track your interest and they track when you like, oh, I'll just bookmark that and come back to it. And then algorithmically, they raise the price as much as they think they can get away with. This is a well-known phenomenon. Airlines are doing this. Airlines are doing this, hotels are doing this, holiday programs are doing this, and it's all going to be driven by AI in the future. The algorithms are only going to get better. This probably represents one of those algorithms completely shitting the bed based on something that's then going to be tweaked. for whatever reason, the algorithm thought this poor lady would be willing to pay £5.8 million to go to Malta. But this is going to be the state of things to come. They've even talked about supermarket pricing operating in this way, that they're going to monitor stocks as things start to go down and manipulate prices ever so slightly. They're going to monitor your spending. And then when you take an item to the front desk, there might be some, oh, there's a price check on it. People are looking to use AI and algorithms to bleed you out of every last cent they can possibly get. We are far beyond your phone listening to you. And one minute you're talking about a type of food and it's recommending you a restaurant in the ads that just so happens to serve it. We are getting so far beyond that now in the AI world that this is actually not just an innocent mistake. This is the start of some real sinister malevolence to come. And speaking of which, every now and then you will get a craze for toys, a craze for books, a trend. Might be a type of handbag, might be a type of cuddly toy, might be fucking Beanie Babies, might be Harry Potter books. They're the must-have accessory for you, for your children, for everyone. Everyone's got to have them. Nobody can explain why. And unfortunately, we got another one of those in 2025. Labubu dolls. What are they? I don't know. But apparently, because Blackpink popularized them, they're a type of doll from South Korea. All of a sudden, all the other music stars around the world that love the K-pop industry, they started using them. Rihanna, Dua Lipa, etc. Even David Beckham had one in public. And all of a sudden, this shit fuzzy toy that literally looks like something you would get from a fucking 1980s fairground for knocking a coconut off a pole is a popular fashion item that everybody has to have. And so you end up with people desperately getting these. Indeed, in esports, we've even had people saying, hey, anyone's out there in like Asia or whatever, pick me up a Labubu. I will fucking pay you. My child is desperate to have a Labubu. It's never the child. I don't understand. I'm looking at it. What am I missing? Why is this popular? It can't just be Blackpink. It can't, but it is. You end up with insane things occurring as a result of this. Now, let's be clear. This is just the equivalent of what we used to call gonks in the UK. Just a gonk was a very cheap, cuddly toy sold at fairgrounds, usually made out of a toilet tube covered in fur with a head put onto it. That's what they were. They were designed to be mass-produced. They represented a prize that ultimately still meant you'd spent way more than it was worth when you got them. That's what a Labubu looks like. This looks like an unbelievably cheap thing to market, cheap thing to produce, but it's now a fashion item, and indeed whoever is responsible for Labubus is about to get very fucking wealthy indeed, in a sickening way you can't even imagine. Even though it's just a cuddly toy at this time with no law or nothing beyond this, famous people bought it, there's a movie in the works by Sony from the people that brought you Madam Web. We have a Labubu movie. So, by the way, if you're listening to this and you're a parent, it's over, guys. It's over. You will have to watch this movie on endless loop in about 2 years, probably less, because they will churn it out, because it's the Sony Slophouse. And you're going to every day, put on the Labubu movie, put on the Labubu movie. You will pray for death. But that's what's happening. Even though they haven't produced a filmmaker or a producer to it, because the deal had only been signed, it's too early to even tell whether it will be live action or animated. Hell, why not make it AI and just fucking let's unleash the Antichrist? I'm ready for it. But it also, the comedy around the Labubus doesn't stop there, because in Britain, guess what? Have you got a license for that Labubu? Yes, there was a great Labubu heist. I told you it was a year of heists. Somebody tried to smuggle in 259,000 fake Labubus worth over $3.5 million that were then seized at the UK border. That is, they weigh 24 tons. 90% of the seized Labubus were counterfeit. 75% of the seized counterfeit toys failed basic safety tests, having been created with banned chemicals and choking hazards, while 46% of them experienced serious safety issues. I don't even know what that would be. A Labubu that bursts into flames. The Hamas Labubu. With 7 in 10 toy buyers motivated by cost and just 27% citing safety as a purchase consideration, a new campaign aims to highlight the hidden harms of fake toys. This is an entire article on the British government website about Labubus. Whoever just called them Habubus after that last joke is a genius. Love you, Bogoosh. But yes, that issued by the somewhat Orwellian-sounding British Government Intellectual Property Office. Speaking of heists, yeah, the gold toilet one didn't necessarily go down too well. But why don't I tell you about the heist of the century? There was a heist at the Louvre in France. And somebody broke in and stole specifically targeted jewels worth 76 million. This puts the golden toilet heist to shame.
Some have called it the heist of the century. Priceless jewels swiped at a Hollywood-style robbery at the Louvre. Here's what we know. The audacious break-in happened here in the heart of Paris in broad daylight between 9:30 and 9:40 local time, just 30 minutes after the doors of the world-famous museum opened to visitors. A matter of metres from the Mona Lisa and Louvre Pyramid, the thieves entered the building here at the Apollo Gallery, home to the crown jewels. Using a motorised ladder, two of the alleged gang of four accessed this first-floor window, which faces out onto the Paris River Seine. Dressed in neon vests and balaclavas, they cut the window open. With items from Napoleon and French regents on show, they used small chainsaws to cut open two display cases, setting off alarms. No one was injured, but security guards were reportedly threatened by the suspects, while confused visitors were ushered out. The robbers were in and out in under 10 minutes, swiping treasures including a tiara, necklaces and earrings. While a crown belonging to Empress Eugenie was found dropped outside. The suspects then fled the scene on two scooters after attempting to set fire to the mechanical ladder.
In the future,
Elise works in security at the Louvre. She says staff feared it was vulnerable.
All of us repeatedly warned about the difficulties we face every day at work. Equipment being in poor condition, sometimes even completely obsolete, coupled with a very drastic cut in staff, we inevitably reached the limit of what we could do to secure the building and its collections.
This was a brazen daylight robbery at one of the world's most visited museums. And there are tough questions already around security. But the main focus now is the manhunt and catching this gang. Experts say they must be found quickly before the jewels are destroyed.
I personally think that the burglars, they've underestimated a little bit the second part of the business, because they made a coup, it was okay. But after that, you've got to trade the material, which is very difficult because the pieces are
super. He's going for my luck.
And impossible to put in auction and to sell like this.
So the clock is now ticking with fears the national treasures could be lost forever.
Now, just before we get into the next part, and this is controversial, I think, okay, I'm against theft, stunning and brave, right? But I think if you do a super cool heist, that should carry a lesser sentence than if you rob somebody's house, rob somebody's business, or rob a bank, or mug somebody. I think, like, you should get just, like, I don't know, if you get caught after a heist, everyone should go, fucking hell, you nearly did it, mate. You nearly got away, and you do, like, 12 months. Is that fair? Like, I'm only half joking. Think of the planning that went into this shit. I mean, okay, what does it say about France? It's kind of like the Maginot Line all over again, isn't it? Like, all it took was a ladder. But still, I'm sure a lot of planning went into it. And I just think, yeah, you get 12 months and George Clooney makes a film about it with Brad Pitt. If we, you know, If anything, what I'm saying is, you know, it would encourage, yes, it would encourage more heists and our lives would just be super more interesting as a result of it. Like grimy crime, fucking lock them up. I don't care. Send them to jail, throw away the key. Super cool heists like this, heist of the century, stealing these jewels, specifically targeted, getting in and out undetected. Sick. More of that, please. So that's where I stand on that one. But anyway, you're probably going to say, well, Richard, what have you got for the next segment? Because how do you go from this to something else? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Here's what's interesting about this. People were looking at photographs from all around the building, and indeed all the media from around the world were suddenly dispatched to the Louvre. They were around the building, filming it, looking at where they got in, taking photos, laying things out. And then somebody noticed that next to the police, this is unbelievable, was this guy. That guy on the right. And the internet went, holy fucking shit, who's this dude? And social media started swirling it around, saying that, oh my God, it is a suave French detective, a la, well, Poirot was Belgian. Whatever, you don't have to split hairs on it. It would be, shit, would it be Clouseau? He wasn't very fucking suave, though, was he? I don't know, there's probably an obvious French detective. Play the Pink Panther theme tune for all I give a fuck. But anyway, everyone was like, holy shit, it's real. The memes are real. Look at this guy in a fedora with an umbrella and a fucking waistcoat hanging out with the police. He's going to solve the crime. Look at him. Clean shaven, chiseled jaw. Anyway, everybody was trying to find out who Fedora Guy was. Fedora Guy, actually, at one point on social media, was being presented as a legendary French detective who, despite looking young, had decades of experience when it came to heists. He was France's leading guy. And people were retweeting this and posting this on Instagram and posting it on YouTube and talking about this guy and saying, well, whoever these heist people are, they're fucked now because Inspector Fedora is on the fucking case. Anyway, turned out Fedora the Explorer was just a fucking kid. It was just some kid who was a fan of detectives and detective films and detective books who turned up to the fucking Louvre looking absolutely fire, by the way, it's got to be said, dripped out of his fucking mind and just stood there posing for photos and set the internet on fire. You can see here, in the 3 weeks since the Louvre Museum heist, as investigators sought to find out who was behind it and why the French crown jewels had been so easy to steal, another mystery remained. Who was Fedora Man? The dapper youth in a hat was photographed outside the museum that Sunday. It went viral on social media, prompting theories about his identity. Police moved swiftly to arrest and charge four people for the crime. Sorry to skip to the end and the spoilers. They didn't get away with it, which is why I'm saying, just give them 12 months, eh? Come on. All's fair, right? It was a cool story. It was a cool moment. It distracted us from Trump for 5 minutes. It's got to be worth something. In fact, by the way, if you want to call me at the trial, I will say that. That's a valid defense. While the Louvre admitted CCTV security was inadequate. However, the Fedora Man remained an enigma until now. The Dandy, it turns out, is a local teenage fan of Sherlock Holmes and Hercule Poirot, who just so happened to be at a real crime scene. Pedro Elias Garzon Del Val, a 15-year-old from Rambouillet, southwest of Paris, told the Associated Press news agency he'd planned to visit the Louvre with his family, but found the museum was closed. We didn't know there was a heist, he said. As he asked officers about the closure, an AP photographer seeking to capture the security cordon took a picture and it included Pedro in the frame. Pedro only realised the photo had gone viral 4 days later when a friend sent him a screenshot asking, is that you? When he replied it was, the friend said he had 5 million views on TikTok. I was a bit surprised, Pedro told the AP. Not as surprised as I am that you're 15-year-old walking around dressed like that. When I was 15-year-old, if I had gone into school dressed like that, I would have got the shit kicked out of me. So maybe France is really fucking actually a lot cooler than I ever gave it credit for. I couldn't have gone into school and gone, yo, you all see Poirot last night? Got my head fucking stoved in. Also, by the way, the fit is immaculate. Why can't Hassan dress like this instead of Chairman Mao? Also in October, one of the most interesting trials of the last 18 months came to its denouement. I am, of course, talking about Diddy. Yes, Sean Combs was sentenced to more than 4 years in prison after one of the most salacious trials in the history of modern America. Yes, Sean Combs stood accused of a number of things, but forget what he was accused of. Let's look at some of the details that were coming out, that ultimately Sean Combs was running these sex parties, a highly delicate topic in the post-Pizzagate, post-Epstein world. People assume exploitation. There were allegations of exploitation. Indeed, charges brought that specifically went to those exploitation allegations. He was linked to celebrity Sean Combs, supremely untalented as a musician, yet for some reason supremely powerful as a musical producer. Also, there were salacious details about his sex life, which were interesting, let's say. For instance, do you know anyone who needs to buy baby oil in bulk? I don't. I'd never even heard the term freak off before. Is it a real thing? Who knows? But in the end, he ended up doing time, 4 years, for the charges he was found guilty of, which was before the judge delivered his 50-month sentence. Oh, by the way, shout out to the court artist on this trial. The drawings were fucking brilliant. Some of the funniest court drawings I've seen since the Trump ones. Just really, really hilarious. I'm guessing intentionally. Before the judge delivered his 50-month sentence, Combs addressed the court, his first public word since the trial began. Combs apologized to his victims, specifically naming his two ex-girlfriends. Right, my actions were disgusting, shameful, and sick, he said. I got lost in excess. I got lost in my ego. He went on to apologize to his mother and his children. I'm so sorry. They deserve better, he said, referring to his 7 children, most of whom were in the courtroom. Then he begged the judge for a second chance, saying he would never jeopardize time with his family again. I ask your honor for mercy. I beg your honor for mercy. I don't have nobody to blame but myself. I know that I've learned my lesson. In the nearly 2-month federal trial in New York City, prosecutors accused Combs of using his celebrity status and sprawling business empire to run a criminal enterprise and sex traffic his former girlfriends. Prosecutors argued Combs sex trafficked women through what were called freak-offs, or encounters in which he would pay male escorts to have sex with his girlfriends while he watched and filmed. The government argued Combs coerced the women into unwanted sexual encounters with drugs and physical violence. Combs, 55, was found not guilty in July of the most serious charges, which were racketeering, conspiracy, and sex trafficking of his two ex-girlfriends, Miss Ventura and Jane, as the court would know her. He was convicted on 2 charges of transportation to engage in prostitution, a felony. Now, great, get him off the board. He's away in prison for 4 years. He's a wrong'un. We love it. But you know who loved it more than you could love it? I could love it. Anyone could love it. It's your boy 50 Cent, a perennial hater of Diddy forever. And when 50 Cent hates you, it's going to the grave. There's no way to make up for it. He chooses who he hates very carefully, but it is on for life if he ever chooses to. And so it was with P. Diddy. And yet he waited in the wings to fund a documentary. Now, details of this documentary are incredible. P. Diddy had, even through his trial, even through all of the problems that were going to get him in trouble in the first place, he had a videographer following him around, filming his life, because P. Diddy is so egotistical, he wanted to tell his life story, and thought every minute of his life may or may not be significant, including phone conversations with his own defense counsel, and God knows what else. After an argument with that videographer, the videographer went to 50 Cent and said, you want to buy this shit? And 50 said, yeah, I want to buy that shit. And he did buy that shit. And then he called up Netflix and said, do you want to see this shit? And Netflix said, fuck yeah, we want to see this shit. And then 50 said, do you want us to edit a documentary together that makes P. Diddy look like an absolute animal? And you pay me tons of money for it. And then I'll go and promote it. And I'll go and promote it anywhere and everywhere. And Netflix went, yeah, this is a no-brainer. And so the documentary got made, The Fall of Sean Combs, or The Reckoning, sorry, of Sean Combs. But the reason I forget the name is because I like to call it what 50 Cent called it, which was Did He Do It, right? There's a trailer for the documentary.
We have to find somebody that'll work with us that has dealt in the dirtiest of dirty business. We're losing.
Puffy, Puff Daddy, Diddy, Sean Combs. All of these reincarnations, all those name changes, are attached to really bad deeds.
Everything in life, you're gonna have people that are bad and people that are good. You have to choose your side.
Now, obviously, I have watched this documentary with great interest multiple times. It is wild as fuck. It is absolutely wild. I am proud that in my awards that I hand out every year, 50 Cent is the hater of 2025, and with good reason. P. Diddy is a massive piece of shit. Let's not downplay what he did, but here's some of the fun parts about it. This documentary is clearly edited in such a way that P. Diddy has no recourse, cannot come out of it looking anything other than the worst human being that's ever lived on the planet. 50 Cent obviously chose that by design. He claims he wasn't involved in the editing of it, and indeed has claimed he left some of the worst stuff out of the documentary, which, you know, he also did then say he might put it up on YouTube. But anyway, it's got to be said, it is insane. I totally recommend that you watch it. It's got everything in there from the beef with Tupac right the way through to the strange sex stuff, which involves collecting semen, apparently. So watch it. It's wild. But I will say this, 50 Cent loved promoting this documentary. There's actually a rumor circulating that he did more interviews on a certain network because it was the network that Diddy, it was the only network that was broadcasting Diddy's prison. So 50 was always hoping that Diddy would be there watching TV and 50 would be on there with a shit-eating grin promoting the fuck out of this documentary, talking trash about fucking him and Diddy and all of his nonsense. And look, he definitely did dozens. I mean, we might be talking close to 100 public spots promoting it. And some of it, they're in weird places. Like, you just wouldn't expect to see 50 Cent on TV on these shows. Like, what the hell is this?
I want to congratulate you, 50. I want to congratulate you on your docuseries, Sean Combs, The Reckoning. It's number one on Netflix. Yeah. Like, it's been number one on Netflix. Did you actually expect it to be as big as it got?
I expected it to be bigger. It's actually exceeded my expectations now.
Wow.
Stranger Things is a huge show, and it's outperforming Stranger Things on Netflix.
It's outperforming everything on Netflix. You know, looking at this, I think you should start a private investigation firm. I'll be your first client. This 50 find out everything. Now, because this is a lot of the personal footage of Diddy. It shocked a lot of people. And I know, 50, the way you run, this cannot be all that you have. Is there other stuff that you just have not shown?
Yeah, well, everything couldn't make the... It was four episodes.
Right.
So it was a lot. You had to pick and choose things. Like, even in, like, an area where he chooses to date people who he knows previously dated someone. He has a baby by a woman that was dating Tupac.
Wow.
To add to it. But we had to cut it down so it couldn't...
For time. So, so are you coming out? I know next year is going to be a number two. Season two?
I just put it on YouTube.
Put it on YouTube. Well, we can subscribe and get it. I love it. And, you know, with everything that was out and all of these people that were coming forward, have there been any, like, new tips that you've gotten since it has been released?
Well, everyone starts to feel a little more comfortable when they see other people telling their truth about it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's got to be something on YouTube coming. I know. But you know, looking at the docuseries, and I just remember back in the day, 50, like, rappers, if there was any beefs, they would have, like, diss tracks.
Yeah.
It would be the diss tracks. Now it's just, like, a docuseries. So I feel like, am I the one getting older? It's a docuseries. So, like, if you have a beef, who's going to be the next docuseries about?
I don't think that's a good business plan to kind of go after each.
It's just specific.
This one, the timing was... I knew what it was going to turn into.
Yeah.
And he refused to file bankruptcy.
He refused to file bankruptcy?
Well, yeah, because just his ego. I would have filed bankruptcy immediately. I don't mind bankruptcy.
Oh, you?
But I'm not going to pay. I'm filing Chapter 11 so fast, your head's going to spin. I'll be back. You go, what happened? No, I'm just not going to pay.
So, as you can see, I haven't seen him smile that much since he told the story about the guy who shot him 9 times, died in mysterious circumstances, taking hating to a level you cannot believe. And I'm sure there's more to come from that beef in 2026. Right, where shall we go in November, getting to the end of the year now? Well, I've talked a lot about how I don't like Keir Starmer, and I think Keir Starmer is at historic low approval ratings. If you're over the seas and in Europe and you're kind of curious as to why, this story will probably help you. Sir Keir Starmer had to apologise to a teacher after driving a class into a frenzy by doing the 6-7 dance.
Oh, it's not 6-7. Yeah, and now you're at the end already. How did you get to the end that quickly?
Was very it, good that,
no, because when I last saw you, you were here. Six seven. Are you doing page 6-7?
We're not over that yet. Still very much.
Now you've driven the kids. Do you know how long it takes me to get them to open the book, Starmer? Fucking cunt.
Show. Have you got any
questions? See you later. That's a bit wild.
That lovely 6-7.
Yeah, look, the kid's still doing it as he leaves.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. By the way, the implication is they've banned the 6-7 meme in school. And now the Prime Minister's done it. So what happens now? You've ruined that school. You may as well have burnt that school to the ground as you left.
That's lovely. Do you know children get into trouble today, Natty Maskell?
Oh, do they?
So, right. Yeah, they're lovely children in
year two. Yeah, there we are. Sorry about that.
No, it's absolutely fine.
It's not absolutely fine.
I didn't start it, miss.
And he said, I didn't start it. Wow. Doesn't it just make him relatable? No, it doesn't. I'm not going to belabor the point of the 6-7 meme other than to just say it's one of those memes that's kind of like, I don't know, it really shows where the internet's at right now, because ultimately it is a meme that doesn't have a hard genesis, doesn't really mean anything, and is the preserve of a generation so young that you would expect them to enjoy stupid things that don't make sense because their brains aren't fully formed. But ultimately, why it would go any higher than a year two in an English school is beyond me. Prime Minister, you've done it again. Perhaps there is a segue that I could do here, but I'll let you fill it in. Also happened, there's been a lot of bin strikes. There's been a lot of bin strikes around Britain. I wouldn't know anything about that living in Birmingham. But unfortunately, fly tipping is the new hotness. Here we have it. We ended up with a river of illegal waste in a place called Kidlington. It just turned up overnight. Apparently, it was normal. And then we ended up with this. Now, we don't know how it got there or who did it, but we do know right now in Britain we've got some real problems when it comes to getting rid of our rubbish. You would be forgiven for thinking that was a slum in Mumbai, but this is meant to be an idyllic part of the British countryside, which is being ravaged by stuff like this. You can see we've got these two shots of it, like, that's the scale of what's gone on there. Now, it says here, the rubbish pile consists of processed, shredded, domestic and commercial waste, including shredded plastics, polystyrene, tyres and other household items. In other words, the type of item you would have a hard time getting rid of or would typically have to pay somebody to get rid of. And the fact that it's shredded implies that maybe one such service has been storing up these shredded goods, then, under cover of darkness, has decided to drop a fucking pile of shit the length of the Berlin Wall in the middle of the British countryside. This is just something that's happening all over Britain. And yes, the government are calling it an environmental catastrophe. They're right. What are you doing about getting our rubbish disposed of properly? We're still waiting, by the way, for the bin strike to end in Birmingham City, which has been going on across all of 2025, started technically in March, although there was limited services going back as far as November of 2024. There are rats everywhere, disease everywhere, parts of Birmingham totally uninhabitable, and obviously it's not just happening in Birmingham. People's waste is piling up. These services are offering to come in and take it away. You pay them, they take it away, but there's no more landfills, there's no more barges, it's not going out anywhere, and eventually it's going to turn up in your backyard one way or another. Just another sign of broken Britain. Thank you, Keir Starmer, the second worst thing you've done after the 6-7 meme. Now, if Britain has failed, I'll tell you a country that hasn't. Italy. Mamma mia. Right? We all love Italy. We love it, actually, because it seems to be one of the last places you can mock and ridicule without fear of being called racist. You can even do silly voices, silly accents, silly clothes, references to popular video games. Nobody cares. One day it's going to change, and if you're the last person to do it, you're in big, big trouble. But for now, Italy remains comedic, but not for me. I have always admired the Italians, their can-do attitude, the way that they solve problems. And indeed, I want to show you the brilliance of one Italian man from Borgo Virgilio. It's a sad story in many ways. His mother died, and his mother had worked a long, long life. She was entitled to a state pension she would never get now because she was dead. But this Italian man decided, no, she is going to get all of her pension. And you can see here, incredible. He dressed up as his own dead mother and was going to the pension office every month to claim the pension that she was entitled to. And I have to say, he's done a great job. He's done a wicked job there. I don't think I can make myself look like my mother. I don't think there's any CGI, makeup, prosthetics that could do it. This cunt's done it with a wig and some earrings. What a fucking boy. Says here, an Italian man is under investigation. I mean, how much, this isn't the Louvre heist, is it, guys? Let's be real. An Italian man is under investigation for benefit fraud and hiding a body. That's the bad part, I guess. After allegedly dressing up as his dead mother, including mimicking her hairstyle with a wig and wearing makeup. It went from a funny story to just being Ed Gein in one sentence. It do be like that sometimes. In order to claim her pension, the man from Borgo Virgilio, close to the northern Italian centre of Mantua, allegedly claimed thousands of euros in pension payments after the death of his mother in 2022. Instead of reporting her death, he allegedly hid her body in his home. It was not until earlier this month when the 56-year-old allegedly disguised himself as his mother in an attempt to renew her ID card at the local council office that police were alerted by a suspicious member of staff. I bet that phone call was wicked. Authorities compared an official photo of the deceased woman, there it is, with that of her son. Police then inspected the man's home and found her body hidden in the laundry room. Yeah, he probably should have buried her. Probably would have been better. Anyway. Police then inspected the man's home, found a body hidden in the laundry room. Francesco Apporti, the mayor of Borgo Virgilio, told the Corriere della Sera that the man had shuffled into the council office dressed as an old woman. He wore lipstick, nail polish, jewellery, and old-fashioned earrings, and had a dark brown bob of hair. The man tried to imitate a female voice. He wants to be careful. He might get fucking cancelled. The man tried to imitate a female voice, but occasionally a few masculine notes slipped out. Upon closer inspection, the council staff member noted the man's neck was a bit too thick, and even the wrinkles were strange. The skin on his hands did not seem to be that of an 85-year-old woman. Corriere reported the man was an unemployed nurse. It's always them. Thanks to his mother's pension and three properties, had an annual income of €53,000. And so, we slither into December. Oh, God, Dwight. Yes, don't worry, I've got funny ones for December because it's really bad, obviously. Finally, after the best part of a year of wrangling, Donald Trump took a break from posting golden statues of himself in a fictitious future Gaza to release the Epstein files, something he had said he would do, something they had fake public events using rightoid influencers to do before realizing every file they had already been released. And people were going through them. However, we're still in this weird quantum state of being with the Epstein files. So far, there is nothing in the released Epstein files that prove Trump has done anything wrong. There is a fake allegation of rape from a mentally ill person that was put in like 2020 when Biden was fucking running for office. There's clear and evident proof that him and Epstein were estranged and fallen out and didn't like each other. There's a lot of Bill Clinton for reasons I guess we just can't talk about. And ultimately, the Democrats pushing this seem to have scored an own goal. But Donald Trump also somehow took that own goal, Uno reversed it, went up the other end, and also scored an own goal. How did he do that? Because ultimately, if there's nothing to hide, and every time they release the files, it looks like there's nothing to hide. When you say there's nothing to hide, release all the files and do all of that. I think the problem Trump has got is he's not necessarily protecting himself. He is protecting his donor class, a lot of billionaire buddies that he would like to be buddies with after his second term ends. Or indeed, who knows what he's going to do or what scam he's going to run or what money he's going to want to raise in the future. There's also a chance, by the way, if the midterms go bad, he could be impeached and be fighting for his life again and trying to avoid prison, in which case he's going to have to raise lots of money to avoid that end. In which case, his billionaire buddies that may or may not have been to that island are probably going to get called upon. The bottom line is, for the average American, the Epstein files are a total fugazi. This doesn't really move the dial politically. But for the terminally online among us, people want to get to the bottom and actually see all of the files. Spoiler, you're never going to. Not in a million years. We know there's videotapes of people having sex. We know there's incriminating photographs. We know there's dubious audio recordings. We know Jeffrey Epstein was quite meticulous in doing this. How do we know? Because in the initial photographs of his arrest, they were all seized and they took photos of these files. A few photos of Bill Clinton in a hot tub with dubiously looking young women isn't going to do it for most people, unfortunately. And so this is one of those areas where if you ever needed to know about what politics is really about, it's not about red and blue, it's about there's this threshold up here and these are the people that hold the strings that go into red and blue, and those people are truly untouchable, no matter how much you stamp your feet. Occasionally, one might tumble off the edges of being untouchable and be offered up as a sacrifice. That ultimately seems to have happened to Epstein, who totally did kill himself in that prison, by the way. The Epstein files, for the most part, are just an embarrassment for everyone in America's political class. There's no reason why anyone should have been on an island with a known fucking pornographer, particularly after the first allegations and charges happened. There's no reason why I should be looking at photos of Noam Chomsky having a cup of tea with him 1 minute and Steve Bannon having a cup of tea with him the next minute. There's no reason why I should be reading emails from Steve Bannon promising him clemency somehow when we agree he was guilty at a jury trial. And this isn't going to go away in 2026 because Ghislaine Maxwell's trial has now been compromised and her legal team are saying that potentially her rights violated as a result of Democrats leaking what they say is privileged information. We're going to have to wait and see how this all pans out. All that remains to be said is red, blue, whoever's got the money, whoever's got the power, they're going to cozy up to them. And politicians, they like to pretend they're in charge, but they're not. There is a special interest group layer above them that you will never permeate. And the Epstein files, once again, should prove this to everybody and make you a political cynic. Australia next, to round out the year somewhat appropriately. And Australia have been spending a lot of time politically talking about the evils of fascism. It's always fascism. In fact, there's no other belief system in the world that radicalizes people as far as the average Australian politician is concerned. And of course, we know that's not true, but in Australia, you better not say that. And so as a result, Australia have been trying to think of ways that people can be not radicalized. And best way to do that, ban social media. My own views, not really relevant to this segment. I don't want anyone under 18 on social media. It's as simple as that. I think it's dangerous. I feel the effects of social media on my own brain. It turned me into a chud, or a chud adjacent, for a little period of time. It's destroyed my attention span, and I see things on there that do make me angry every day until I take a step away and go, wait, that's what they're trying to do. Take a deep breath, have a fucking shot, and get on with the rest of my day. People not as, you know, robust as me struggle with it. Equally, I don't want to ever see a teenager's opinion about anything. Your opinions are dog shit. You haven't lived a life. You don't know anything about the world. You are reactionary by definition because your hormones are coursing through your body. And that's fine. And you should be cynical about power groups and cynical about the generation above you and cynical about the media and everything else. However, believing everything you hear on TikTok is also retarded. So I don't need to hear how you discovered this today. I don't need for you to relitigate Osama bin Laden's letter on my social media feed. I don't need you to tell me how you think fucking jet fuel can't melt steel beams in 2026. I'm good, and I definitely don't need to hear any opinion about what you think about current policy. I'll wait for you to grow up, and then you can talk to me. So get the fuck off my social media. That would be fine. A place for adults to talk about adult things. That's what social media should be. However, Australia and a lot of governments are going in line with what I want. Wow, okay, this is cool, but it isn't, because they ain't doing it for the reasons you think they're doing it for. And so Australia are one of the first countries that has banned social media for kids under 16. And you go, oh, well, okay. It's really interesting. A lot of people that have railed against social media and social media protections don't want out-and-out bans. They feel this will disrupt children's lives in a really unpleasant and unpalatable way. However, they went ahead and did it. They pulled the trigger. And this is to stop radicalization and also protect children from being exposed to things they shouldn't be exposed to. And they have banned a very specific selection of social media platforms. They've banned TikTok, which, lest we forget, they were meant to do in America, but Donald Trump decided to actually act like a king about that, and Democrats say nothing about it because they need TikTok to potentially win in the midterms. They banned X, they banned Facebook, they banned Instagram, they banned YouTube, they banned Snapchat, and they banned Threads. What's interesting about this is that means they didn't ban Blue Sky. Now, maybe that's because Blue Sky, which is a total shithole populated by the biggest shitlib losers on the planet, talking about garbage things, performatively posting there to no one to own Elon Musk because he did the My Heart Goes Out to You thing you saw earlier in the episode. Maybe it doesn't have the cultural relevance, but equally as well, if you want to get radicalized, Blue Sky is a pretty good place to be. So a lot of rightoids jumped on media saying, why hasn't Blue Sky been banned? It's probably just because the average Australian politician hasn't heard of it. And yes, indeed, one of the things they never talk about is Truth Social never got banned either, because who the fuck uses it apart from Trump himself? So you go, okay, well, Australia has a handle on this whole radicalization thing. 4 days after this ban, it turns out that very much wasn't true. We had, of course, the Bondi Beach shooting, where after 2 years, or close to, of spreading lies about Israel, about Jewish people, it had deadly consequences during a Hanukkah celebration on December 14th. Yes, the cries of famine and the cries of genocide and all this other stuff that was easily disprovable once the cameras got rolling resulted in, of course, Jews being massacred, because that is where it always goes to. And while police were slow to respond and even in some footage cowered behind cars as Jewish lives were being taken. There were heroes, including one brave Muslim man that rose up to save his Jewish brothers and sisters who got shot himself. There was footage of lots of bravery from that day. It really has led me to wonder when it's going to end. 2025 saw a rise in anti-Semitism like I don't think I've seen before in my lifetime. Certainly, far-right groups have always blamed the Jews for everything. Every conspiracy theory will lead you to the Jews did it if you go down the rabbit hole far enough. A lot of conspiracy theories are indeed gateways to far-right groups and anti-Semitic groups. What's weird about 2025 is the lefties now, because of their pro-Hamas, pro-Free Palestine group, they have also become massively anti-Semitic, and it is now resulting in attacks across America, across Australia, across Britain. In Britain, we had a synagogue shooting where one person was killed by the attacker. The other Jewish person trying to save people from the attacker was killed by police that turned up. Welcome to modern Britain. You've had multiple attacks across America, Jewish people being killed, Jewish people being firebombed, the media continually getting stories wrong, only in one direction. A memo from the BBC leaked showing that on average, the BBC Arabic output was getting two stories wrong about Israel per week and having to correct them. This is a concerted effort to drive anti-Semitism, and it results in things like Bondi Beach, unfortunately. However, there were heroes that day, and it's worth including them in any summary of the year. As you can see here in this BBC report, wonderfully written. When bullets began flying at Sydney's Bondi Beach on Sunday, strangers Wayne and Jessica found themselves in the same nightmare scenario. They couldn't find their three-year-olds. In the chaos, separately, they desperately scanned the green. People who'd gathered to celebrate the first day of Hanukkah screamed and ducked. Others ran. Some didn't make it far. The 10-odd minutes that followed were the longest of their lives. Wayne's body was acting as a human shield for his eldest daughter, but his mind was elsewhere with his missing child, Gigi. We had to wait all that time for the gunshots to stop. It felt like an eternity, he tells the BBC. Unbeknownst to him, Jessica's gaze had caught on a little girl in a rainbow skirt, confused, scared, alone, calling out for her mummy and daddy. The pregnant mother couldn't protect her own child, so in that moment, she decided she'd protect this one. She smothered Gigi's body with her own and uttered, "I've got you," over and over again. They could feel the moment a woman about a meter away was shot and killed. By the time the air finally fell silent, Wayne had become all but convinced Gigi was dead. "I was looking amongst the blood and the bodies," he says. "What I saw, no human should ever see that." Eventually, he caught a glimpse of a familiar colourful skirt and found his daughter stained in red, but okay, still shrouded under Jessica. Her son, too, would soon be found, unharmed. She said she's just a mother, and she acted with a mother's instinct. But for me, she's a superhero, and we will be indebted to her for the rest of our lives. Then you have, of course, the story of Ahmed al-Ahmed. Ahmed al-Ahmed was the Muslim man that went and helped and disarmed people. Literally took one of the terrorists' guns away from him, slowed down the rate of murder, and was shot in the process. What comes in the aftermath of Bondi Beach is a strange one. It's strange to process because ultimately the guns were legally acquired. The people that perpetrated this crime were in Australia legally. They were a family that did it, that had slowly been radicalized over time about coverage in Palestine. And all of the massacres, all of the executions of Jewish people that happened across 2025, at no point did the media think to pump the brakes that maybe Israel-Palestine is a more complicated story than simply Israel bad Palestine victims. They never took their time to really look at things. And as a result, Jewish people, even Jewish people with no ties to Israel in America, in Australia, found themselves being targets. Unless I feel crazy having to say this, not every Jewish person in the world is a supporter of the Israeli state, by the way. And Netanyahu remains a deeply unpopular political figure that is likely to lose his next election unless something drastically changes. Bondi Beach is a stark reminder about the part we all play when we tell stories and when we go to coverage about things. It is easy to let our outrage inflame our passions and to say things that ultimately turn out not to be true, or at the very least to be deeply unfair misrepresentations of reality. And in the time when these stories can spread across the internet in seconds and can be proliferated en masse, it can lead to atrocities and tragedies like this. And hopefully, as we move into 2026, the media will take stark notice of that and reflect on what they did. Because for me personally, it's hard to believe that if we had just not had a year of coverage the way that we had, Bondi Beach would have happened. Now, we go from that to, hey, what's happening in Reform? Reform UK, obviously, have had a great year. Reform is the political party now that Labour talks about. The Conservatives are losing people en masse, constant people defecting over to Reform. Reform are the essential, I don't know, what would I call them? The effluvium that probably ran out of Enoch Powell's funeral procession and then took life. They are the party of send them all back, whatever that means, even if it means destroying the NHS, which isn't to say there aren't some people that definitely need to go back, or at the very least don't need to be put in an expensive hotel in London. But certainly Reform are on course for a victory at the next election unless something radically changes. And of course, why wouldn't they be? Look at some of the endorsements they can conjure up. Reform, the austere political party of a dignified British future, they got their endorsement from Bonnie Blue. And at that juncture, well, you say it yourself, I mean, how could you not vote Reform? She did it at a time as well when she had been facing deportation from Indonesia after she pushed their modest laws about as far as she could go. Bonnie, real name Tia Billinger, has admitted she is not knowledgeable about politics, but said she does know the UK is very messed up. The adult performer, who is known for her outlandish sexual stunts, has praised Reform's UK stance on immigration and inheritance tax. Writing for The Spectator, Bonnie criticised the UK under Labour, saying the tax system is terrible and it's smart to leave if you have money. Based and true. There are too many people here, we are too accommodating, and it's causing problems. She explained that she had previously worked for the NHS, I'm guessing not in one of her films, and claimed most people have no idea where the money goes. She also talked about inheritance tax and said, you shouldn't pay any, based and true. You've already been taxed on that money. When my granddad died, it was particularly sad because he was too young for my grandma to receive his pension. That's disgusting. Reform has sensible positions. Lol. On immigration and inheritance tax, so I stand with Nigel Farage. And in case you didn't know her, there she is on Bang Bus. And then we wrap up the episode with some good news. Good news from LA of all places. You, like me, were probably following this story. There was a criminal who was out there in LA, and I'm not Gavin Newsom. And he was doing a repetitive crime over and over again and seemingly just kept getting away from it. But finally, he has been brought to justice. In what is a strangely sexual December, it's got to be said, good news was had that the sex offender, dubbed Butt Sniffer, was finally sentenced to 99 days in prison.
Dubbed by authorities the Burbank Butt Sniffer, he's been ordered to serve 99 days in county jail for violating his parole. 39-year-old Khalees Crowder was arrested.
Now,
has an update on the man dubbed by authorities the Burbank Butt Sniffer. He's been ordered to serve 99 days in county jail for violating his parole.
Just when you thought Andrew Tate's legal problems couldn't get any worse. All of that to end on a cheap joke. So we've done it. That was the I Hated 2025 special. We are probably going to do more episodes of this over the course of 2026. I don't know if I'll ever be able to coax Sam back into doing these episodes. Maybe I'll do it with another partner. Maybe it'll just be myself. It'll never replace the magic and energy of Prime I Hate It Here, or indeed Prime Richard Lewis Show, which became I Hate It Here with another name. But ultimately, yeah, we can't ignore what's going on in the world. That was my 2025 review. Thanks to everybody who tuned in. Thanks for watching. I'm sorry 2025 sucked ass. Surely 2026 couldn't be bad.